Welcome aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis, up for another day of broadcast insolence. All right. Wow. It's not pleasant outside.
Suddenly winter.
Yes. Does that seem fair to you?
No, it doesn't.
Does not seem fair to me.
It's only the 7th of November. I officially had to pull out gloves today.
That was my problem. I walked outside thinking, well, it looks sunny out there, and I haven't had gloves so far this season. I won't need gloves. And then I was like, I totally need gloves today.
Gloves, earball, help for, you know, whatever the earball situation is. You can do the full hat. See, girls, they can pull off the hat. I think women, you know, with long hair, and they got the knit hat on. I think it's a very, very nice look. As a guy, I look like I'm about to rob a bank when I put on a knit cap.
Or you have that full white jacket you bring out in the winter, and then you wear white with it, and you look like a big marshmallow.
Thanks.
I'm sorry you do. Everyone says that because it's so puffy.
It is. Well,
it's not you. It's this jacket. I can see you walking down the street from a mile away. It's
fluorescent white. It's Snow White, and I wear it just in case I have to get into play real life Halo, and I'm in like a snow situation, and I have to be camouflaged.
Could happen.
Or in case a polar bear gets loose from the zoo and I can pretend I'm another polar bear so it doesn't kill me. I have this idea about that. Yeah. Anyway, so I did. I went through all of my earball warming devices and I couldn't find them.
Like earmuffs? What are you talking about? Earball warming?
Yeah, like ear muffs. Like not muffs.
The ones that come around the back of your head?
Those are the 180s. I don't like those.
180s.
That's
Is it
a
just
weird
like
look.
A headband?
Yeah, like a headband.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. I know that's the term. And I was incapable of finding the one. I had a cool one last year. I also have one of these things that's like a muffler that you put over your head, and then goes to your neck. And it just sort of... is instead of wearing a scarf, it's just basically a ring around your neck.
Does it make you quiet as well?
I hope not. That would be a professional problem.
Those are the best in the winter because you can just put them around your neck, or you can bring it up over like the bottom half of your face, or you can go full hoodie and cover your whole face. I have one of those as well. Big fan.
Yeah.
Very versatile.
Yeah, very versatile.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Ready for anything.
Yeah. So that's what I'm... And I was looking at that. I actually road tested that a little bit today. It's bad. I mean, I look out here.
I know.
Look, if you're on the CLTV, you look behind me here.
Looks beautiful. It just looks gorgeous looking out at the lake and Navy Pier. It's just like a nice sky, blue lake. There's even sunshine.
There was ice on the cars on my street today.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa,
The grass is kind of crispy because it's like crunchy and with the snow and the ice.
I had a light dusting up in the North Burbs in little patches around the lawn. Little icy.
It's not good.
No.
And I want to point out that we are owed, I don't know who I call about this, I don't know who we sue about this, but summer did not start till after the 4th of July, as we'll recall, right? 4th of July
weekend.
It was
a late start.
It was started to get a little bit, started to kind of kick in late in June,
because
for sure.
June was crummy, and May was the wettest May on record, and then we're like, yay, summer began in July.
I just remember wearing a jacket to the July 3rd White Sox game where they had the fireworks.
You had a jacket on?
I had a jacket on for that. And I'm like, now wait a second. Now that ain't right.
Well, even 4th of July was bleh.
Yeah. And so that doesn't count. So who do I see about that? That's an entire, it's like 5 weeks of no summer. The spring sucked. I mean, it was like snowing into the, remember, it was snowing in April. I want answers.
Yeah. Fall lasted for about 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Well,
you missed it.
We have a big announcement since Christmas music has already started on the radio. And I go into Starbucks today and
they got all
the Christmas cups. And
holiday
cups. They got some other kind of a cup I guess you pay extra for that's sort of like a reusable plastic kind of a deal.
Yeah.
That's a Christmas deal. Yeah. I don't want that. And the music is, you know, all I want for Christmas, right, is like now in my head is you, the Mariah Carey thing. And then all the people behind, they're all wearing the Jingle Bell hats and the deal, and they're, oh, how's your day going? Oh, my God, my day's not going well!
No, well, wait till people start saying happy holidays. It's still early November. And have you seen the skyline downtown here? A lot of the buildings have already gone green and red with the lights at night.
It's the 7th of November. There is 6 weeks, right? Six, seven, carry the two. 7 weeks until Christmas. This is not right. This is, I can't do this for 7 weeks. And that's just 7 weeks of more winter. And you know what happens after Christmas, right? You got January. And January just, it's bad. It's bad.
Don't sleep on February. Everyone thinks we're out of the woods when we get to February. And February is always brutal.
That's so
you're
true.
You're like, January's through. We're kind of getting close to spring. And then February's like, yeah, not so fast. Here's 12 inches of snow for you.
You know why? Because February starts getting dark after 5 o'clock. You know, you cross that Rubicon.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, see?
There's hope.
Yeah.
There's hope.
We're in good shape. Yeah, look at this. It's getting lighter. And you get the sense in the auto show's there. And you, it's a, yeah, we'll make the turn. It's all going to be good. And it's not.
I think March is the biggest tease month.
March is a tease as well.
April can be the biggest tease.
Basically, we have like one good month a year.
Wow, everything sucks around here.
Well, we get a lot of winter, and you got to like it.
If you're a fan of winter, this, you're in the right spot.
I would like to, first of all, I'd like to tell Mr. Rung that we don't need his kind coming around here and telling us about March, because we have to look forward to something.
I know.
To look forward. Because
March?
Two things happen in March, Eric. You get the time change, right?
Yeah.
Daylight saving time starts again on the second Sunday there.
That's huge.
So
that's
when you're
big,
driving home, it's right? A little sunnier or right. Brighter if there is sun.
So you get that sense. So at least you have that sense. You can pretend. Like I'm doing right now, looking out a window, I'm going to pretend it's 55 degrees out there. I know it's not.
It looks like it's 55 degrees when you look out the window and you're inside. Doesn't it have the appearance of a 55-degree day? A little bit of sun? Kind of,
yeah. But you're right. March is that time when it's still kind of cold, but you're refusing to wear a jacket. You're like, no, I'm not cold.
Also, it could be 60 degrees, you know, on a Saturday, and then the next day it's snowing. You have, you know, 4 inches of snow to walk through.
Do we have any good news or positivity to start the show?
I know.
Well, they cut down the Christmas tree from Millennium Park.
No Christmas.
Where is that coming from?
That's just like the worst. I feel Elgin. Like I hate Christmas right now because I'm just not ready to celebrate the holiday season.
That's right. And first of all, listen, you got to have the warm up. Look, again, Kevin and I are on a mission.
What's the mission?
To bring Thanksgiving back.
To end the war on Thanksgiving.
Right.
The war ended on Christmas, and now Christmas is getting cocky. It's like, okay, you guys had the war on us. We're going to take over 2 months. You guys are screwed. We're taking Thanksgiving.
Right.
Next thing you know, Halloween's going to be Christmas. You're going to be trick-or-treating. Guy's going to open his door in a Santa Claus outfit.
I, for one, am not going to sit here and allow this, the one greatest holiday of the entire calendar year, a year of football, a holiday of football. Of drinking whiskey irresponsibly, of overindulging in delicious, calorie-rich foods, sickness, a Friday that you can take off and watch more football. You don't ever have to take a shower from Thursday morning till Sunday night.
Ew, really?
That is an American holiday, my friends. And yes, yes, there's family. We'll just have to put up with that. But here in the United States of America, I am not going to stand here and not celebrate the fact that we tricked the Native Americans into making us dinner, and then we took over the country.
Classic trickery.
All right.
You have my vote. That's for damn sure.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you. Someone has to do it. All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapkin and find out what's on the roadways.
This week on Chicago's Best, commuters rejoice. This episode is dedicated to you at Chicago's Best off the L, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
Ben Bradley. Hello. That's where I'm from. Ben Bradley is in the WGN-TV newsroom right now, where he's got many thoughts. You had a sit-down interview with outgoing police superintendent Eddie Johnson.
Yeah, about an hour after he talked with Chicago media, I went upstairs to his office for a one-on-one interview, and you could see the kind of the weight had been lifted of those four stars he's been carrying on his shoulder for nearly 4 years now. We talked a lot about the turmoil going on in the city when he came into office. Obviously, you had all those protests over the Laquan McDonald shooting and suspected cover-up happening at the time. Rahm Emanuel was looking for a guy to help out. Eddie Johnson didn't apply but stepped in. And Johnson told me today that an experience when he was a teenager has really informed not only his 31 years as a cop, but also his time as police superintendent. I know you've got a little clip of that.
Yeah, let's play this now.
You know, I had a family member killed by a Chicago police officer, you know, when I was a teenager. Yeah. You know, so I know what that feels like. You know, I've just never talked about it much because I don't want to rip that Band-Aid off for my cousin. You know, so I'm acutely aware of the racial divide that's been involved in this city for decades.
That's an interesting disclosure. And one of the things I always found about Eddie Johnson as police superintendent is that he was not... He comported himself in a different way.
He did.
He was a rather quiet leader. My sense was from being around him, being around other police officers and other police brass, that he was respected as a police officer and as a longtime member of the Chicago Police Department. And there was always this question about whether they should go internal for a police superintendent. And remember, after it was Phil Klein, I think it was the last internal choice, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then Jody Weiss and, of course, Karen McCarthy. And then they decided to go back internal. And there is, I think, I think you get a little bit of a different outcome when it's internal. But, you know, he also understands, as being an African-American in the city of Chicago, that there are a lot of different sociological problems that happen in this city, and some that are intramural and some that are extramural in the black community and in the police community. And he's a realist.
We talked about that extensively today. He told me a story of, you know, he grew up in Cabrini Green, lived there till he was about 9 years old or so. And he said he distinctly remembers one time there was some sort of shooting or some crime in Cabrini Green. Police came looking for whoever it was. And Eddie Johnson's father, in his pajamas, went outside to see what was going on. And Eddie told me today that the cops clamped the handcuffs on him. And he remembers seeing his dad in handcuffs, knowing that the cops had done the wrong thing, had cuffed somebody who had no involvement. And he said, when you grow up having those experiences, you tend to listen more. And you tend to believe people when they say, my perspective isn't your perspective, hear me out. Mm-hmm. And he also told the story from his first few weeks on the job, talking with a person who had been just a feverish anti-police protester in this city for years. And Eddie Johnson, in his first few weeks on the job, had invited him up to his office at police headquarters. And this person, a community activist, said, you know, I've been fighting for decades to get into this office to be heard. And Eddie Johnson said, a lot of what I did was listen, but he could do it from both the position of an African-American who grew up in the city of Chicago, witnessing what he did.
And
but
one
also,
of the most dangerous stretches of land in America.
But also somebody who then wore the uniform and became a Chicago police officer. Right. And at that moment in Chicago time, I think that's probably what the city needed.
I also want to say something about, we could just stop for a second and take this out of the perspective of a police officer and put this into the perspective of a Chicagoan. You have to stop and think about the hundreds of thousands of kids and moms and dads that lived in Robert Taylor or Cabrini Green, two of the most notorious public housing projects in the world, essentially, mm-hmm. certainly in
yeah.
America.
Mm-hmm.
And Cabrini Green, as we'll all recall, when Jane Byrne was mayor, a lot of people here are too young to remember Jane Byrne as mayor, but when Jane Byrne was mayor, she moved in.
Briefly.
To Cabrini Green, very briefly, overnight, one night, but they said that she was there for 7 days. There had a lot of police presence there. The whole idea was that they were going to stop this because it really had become a vertical shooting gallery. Mm-hmm. You had sniper attacks. You had a lot of people getting killed in the courtyards and open drug markets. It was a complete mess, and there seemed like nothing that could be done about it. Because there was a lot of political cover for it as well, mm-hmm. in that era. I mean, there are stories still yet to be written about all the people who are complicit in that. However, if you're a kid growing up in that, you don't want to die, and you don't want to join a gang. Most of those kids don't want to join a gang. Only the kids born into the gangs are the ones who think that that's where they're going to go. And even those kids, mm-hmm. some of them don't want to join the gang, right? But the kids who are trying to avoid the gang, the kids who are trying to avoid eye contact with them or just get around the drug market or whatever it is, they need adults in their life that are going to help them. And it's not a police officer that's going to do it. They need adults internally that were going to help them.
They're looking for some structure. Eddie Johnson's right. lucky that he had that structure.
Right.
And something he said today resonated with me. He said, you know, growing up with the experience I did, it would have been easy to hate the city. But his family taught him different.
Yeah, I heard that, and it was such a powerful thing. He said that I could have wound up hating the city, but I chose to be part of the solution, yes. is what he is basically saying. And the part where he broke down was when he said wearing those four stars was wearing the weight of the world on my shoulders. And you can tell he really felt it from all angles. He described how he held the hands of mothers who lost their children, how, as you point out, he just listened to people in the community, maybe that would never have been invited to the superintendent's office before to talk and try to understand. And, you know, I think the sad part here is that there's this cloud at the very last few weeks of his reign.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll
talked about that, Anna, and we'll have that for you coming up at 4.
Thank you. Ben. That was a very nice tease of that. I
dropped that in there.
Sorry.
I thought we had teased it already.
Roe's been on me about the clock and getting off at a specific time.
Yeah,
otherwise, he just turns
worry,
off my microphone.
We can go right up to the bottom of the hour here, Ben.
Oh.
We
have 2 more minutes.
So anyway, how was your day?
No,
everything good?
I want to say something else.
Did you go to the grocery?
I do want to. I want to round out this point about Eddie Johnson too. I've got a lot of respect for him.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he had to bury three Chicago. Actually, within a calendar year, four Chicago police officers, right? Police commander, and three officers. One that was killed, and in an attempted mass shooting at Mercy Hospital, and then the two officers Marmoleo and Gary, who were killed on the tracks, while searching for a gunman, right? Killed mm-hmm. on train tracks. When you have to do something like that in 1 year, and you have to meet those families and console those children and those widows and deal with that and say that this blue line still stands behind you and make sure that those families are taken care of, as, you know, these mm-hmm. other charitable organizations do. This is... It's gut-wrenching work, because you know how hard, you know the peril, the risk that goes into this, right?
Without a doubt. And he told me it was actually at a Gold Star Families event in September where he had just talked with those four widows you described.
Right.
And he's sitting there with the mayor, and he turned to the mayor, and he told me today that he said, we got to talk about my end date.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Other factors may have played a role. Other factors may have accelerated, but there's no doubt Eddie Johnson served the city for 31 years.
Yep.
Right.
And
did
so honorably.
And I think that the falling asleep in his car and all the rest of that is an afterthought at the end of this. I think he'll be remembered as a successful police superintendent and a guy who was, you know, listen, cops, the one thing you know for sure, the one thing they despise as much as criminals that they have to go chase down is their bosses. And so,
very true.
Right. And so that's
all
the,
of them.
Right. And they know that. And the bosses know that. And that's just how it goes. And it's part
of
the culture.
Do you want to rank that? Is it the bosses, the media, the criminals?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's in that order.
It's bosses. It's bosses, criminals, media, and then some guy that they were...
Who didn't give him the right discount over at the place.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. For the coffee.
I don't even know what it is. All right, Ben, now it's time for you to go.
Bye-bye, Ben.
Bye.
Goodbye, Ben. We've got the news right now with Eric Rung. All right. Thank you, Eric. Although I should not say thank you. I want to talk about a story that's happening right here in our little area that is alarming a group of parents. Mm-hmm. There is a school on the northwest side, Chicago, St. Eugene's.
Okay.
And it is, obviously, St. Eugene's would be a parish school. It's part of the Archdiocese. And it's being closed like that. And the parents are being told if they have any hope of saving it, they've got to raise $250,000 yesterday. And Dr. A.J. Aserno, who's been on the program with us a couple of times, actually, is a guy who does a lot of charitable work up in the northwest suburbs with Clearbrook and some other organizations. He's a dentist, and he takes care of people with developmental disabilities. A guy who gives back to the community. You brought this to my attention earlier today, and there is some concern because it appears it's like a unilateral decision that could be made by by the Cardinal without anybody else deciding. Is that what your concern is?
Yeah, that is the concern. I mean, you know, they rolled in last night into a parent meeting and gave us the option of you either raise this money or one of the other options is close the school. You know, this is not a show that we haven't seen. This show the Archdiocese has done and rolled into many schools, and they do the same thing. The unfortunate thing is that a lot of these schools that actually do go ahead and raise the funds that they tell them to need, they still end up closing the school or they're back in the same situation a few years later.
So what's the time period you have to raise this large amount of money, or did they say that?
So we have till January 31st. The big question is this, is that it really isn't about the raising of the money. It's really about the plan and the process of what the Archdiocese is doing. And really, we're making a plea to the Cardinal to look at this process, look at us. You know, they come in and they want a year-to-year plan. That's not a plan. That's not good for kids. Kids don't like to just not know, well, I'm going to be here for this year, but I don't know about next year. The idea is that we understand that consolidation is happening. We understand it's very difficult to run Catholic schools. We understand all those things. We're asking for a merge. We're asking for help from the Archdiocese, and they're looking at us and going, no, you guys figure it out. Here you go. This is what you need to do to raise some money. And then if you can't, we'll figure it out or we'll have to close the school and go from there.
Well, just so I understand that. So they are giving you an option of a merger at some point if you don't raise the money?
No, we have not. They have not. They came. They knew that we wanted a merger. They came last night and did not offer that on the table. We are pleading with the Cardinal to relook at that. I know that everybody talks about this Renew My Church that initiative that is going on. A lot of churches and schools are looking into this, but that's not until 2022 for us, and there's no guarantee that we're going to get there.
And what? Explain what that is for those who are not.
So Renew My Church is an effort by the church to go ahead and consolidate and to look at other churches and to see what we can form together.
Consolidate parishes and schools.
That's correct. That's correct. And you know, St. Tech in our area, right down in our area, St. Tecla, St. Cornelius, and St. Tars is going through this process right now. They're all on pins and needles. They all did what they were supposed to do, and now one of those three schools is going to close, and they're going to consolidate. But the process is horrible. It's ripping families apart because now you got to switch schools. And it, like me, I have three kids, and my three kids, there's not enough room in some of these schools where I could put all three of my kids in the same school. So the process in paper looks good, in reality doesn't. We're begging the Cardinal to take a look at the process, take a look at what we're doing and what we're asking for. We have a great school. That's the other thing that I think has shocked the parents. We have an unbelievable community. Our kids are thriving in education. We just have low numbers. We have a revenue problem. We do not have an expense problem. And we want somebody to look at that and say, man, we have 184 kids that want to go through Catholic school, but we have an archdiocese that actually wants to stop that. And we can't figure that out.
So is it low enrollment? Is that what you're saying when you say you don't have the numbers?
It is. It's low enrollment, yes.
But what now, if you got 184 kids and you need $250,000, is that what they're asking for?
Correct.
Okay, so we're talking about another two grand, maybe $2,500 a year for the tuition piece. Would they allow you to do that? Would they allow the tuition to get upped?
They would. I think you know, we're a middle income school.
I know that's not easy. I'm not trying to say that that's an easy solution, but
it definitely is a solution. I think they're looking for anything to cut the deficit. I think, you know, to be honest, Ro, we have mobilized very well. We have a strong community. Getting the money, we're going to do it. We are going to stay open another year. The issue that we have is the Archdiocese and what their process is going forward. You know, they have to relook at this process, putting schools on year-to-year contracts and then saying, hey, you have to up enrollment. Do you know how difficult that is to up enrollment when you say, well, hey, I just heard that you guys had to raise $250,000 and stay open for another year?
Right. Parents get frayed by that.
They have no plan. They have no plan when they roll into these schools and do this, and that's what's very upsetting to the to us Catholics. I mean, I have 41 years in this parish. My mom taught there for over 35 years. I have three kids in the school. I graduated from there. My brother graduated from there. My niece and nephew graduated from there. Like, that's not just me. These are all these families in the community that have that same story. And so it is a part of our community, and they just don't look at that way. There's no sympathy towards that. There's no plan towards that.
All right. Well, let's see if we hear now back from the Archdiocese on this. AJ, thank you very much.
Thanks,
appreciate
AJ.
It. Thanks for telling us.
Appreciate it very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Oh, my gosh.
AJ Acerno. He's the dentist from Decision One. He's the guy that runs that, and he does some really great work. And I think it's also in part because of his training, right? Mm-hmm. And because of his sense of community and sense of giving back.
You could feel the anguish as he talked about this and how important it is in their community and that how badly they want this school to survive. It's just so unfortunate.
It's, you know, you feel like you have a greater sense of control or connection in a private or parochial school. Right. Mm-hmm. Because you've got the archdiocese, you've got the mm-hmm. you've got the church, you've got generally, you know, there's a parish attached to it, not necessarily the high schools, but
right.
to certainly
very common.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that does. And so you do get a sense of that there's going to be some sort of lever that could be pulled here. And then when you're being told that it seems as bureaucratic as the public school system can be. And there's some really great public schools up in the Northwest side, too.
There are.
But those are hard to get into. Right, and I'm sure that they have actually lost kids in this particular parish school to the public schools, which is, I know people are like, if you're living from outside the city of Chicago, you're like, well, how's that possible? Well, it is. It's actually likely in a lot of cases that the Chicago public school now is, as in terms of test scores, is performing as well.
And some parents just, they really like faith-based education. You know, I mean, my daughter goes to Catholic school. I actually like that she learns about other faiths as well as Catholic faith, but she is, I mean, it's just, it is part of an education that some parents had for themselves, and they want their kids to have that as well. They don't want them to go to the public school. They want them to have the Catholic school experience. Right. We've got several texters telling us that they had some other situations like this. We know the Archdiocese closed some schools, of course, in 2018, and also I'm a parishioner at, I'm going to say this wrong, St. Thecia? Is it T-H-E-C-I-A, or is that a misprint? Apparently they say that we are meeting our obligations, and the Archdiocese is also talking to us about doing the same thing.
Right, after meeting their obligations.
After meeting their obligations.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking,
I
hate to be the one to the 1 millionth person to suggest this, but they're sitting on a really nice piece of land in the Gold Coast, the Cardinal's mansion.
Yeah.
That's there. I mean, think about what that, I know that it's an historic building, and I don't think it can actually get changed, but you know, there's millions of dollars that property would go for. And they could also change as an act of civic responsibility. They could also deregister it too. The city could deregister it, so it could be sold if the archdiocese wanted to do that. Because it sits there, and you think about the trouble that this particular archdiocese has been having financially. And I get the stress, and there, you know, fewer parishioners, and there are other issues. There's payouts and things that they have to do. It seems like that sits as a hulking, unlike the cathedrals and unlike some of the other, the Quigley North building and all that, where they'd move mm-hmm. the Archdiocese headquarters to. That just seems like a hulking sense of something that doesn't fit with the grander mission.
Well, of course, the parking lot across from Holy Name Cathedral, they sold off for a lot of dough. Millions and millions. And there was just a story in Crane's, I think today or yesterday, about how the high-end condos that have moved in there. So the Archdiocese did act on that piece of land.
Right. Well, they're just starting to build that now. But that's going to be a multi-billion dollar
selling the condos. I mean, they're showing, you know, the $2 million condos that they're right. going to build. The, you know, the graphic renderings and things like that are already out there.
Yep. All right. We'll come right back. But first, let's check in. Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roadways? There you go. We got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way. Also, Matt Forte is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. You know, he's part of that new football after show on NBC Sports Chicago.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorites, Matt Forte.
And he also, there was an interesting story about him about how he's advocating for changing stations in the men's bathrooms for daddies.
Something? You know,
isn't that something?
Yeah, I don't think that's a great idea.
I know. My husband used to pretend that they didn't have them. I would go and take a look to make sure.
Oh, really?
I would just open the
door
and say,
I'm surprised you didn't get arrested. We should have had you arrested. If I were your husband, I would have called 911.
There can't be. Every single restaurant we go to cannot possibly be without a changing station.
Hello, 911. My wife is in the bathroom trying to find out if I lied to her about a changing station. And I didn't. I didn't see it when I was in there before. And she's coming out and she's really mad.
Well, it always happened after a really messy situation. Like, oh, no, there isn't one here. You're going to have to do it. That's how it would shake out.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. St. Tecla's, by the way.
St. Tecla.
Is that right? Yes. Okay. So sorry to mispronounce that earlier. Thank you to the texter.
Okay. It does sound like a bad, like, I mean, listen, I love Matt Forte, and I know he's got this podcast that Truth Versus Truth podcast. He's got all kinds of things going on. Making the most out of his post-football career. But, I mean, you know,
why does he have to go there and mess it up for the other dads?
Right. I mean, no, our dads didn't have to put up with that.
Yeah, but it's about single dads. What are they supposed to do?
It's more than that. He says he was with his child by himself, and he said he had to sit down in, like, a bathroom stall. He went into the stall and did it on his lap.
Wait, Ro, why are you so against that?
That's where you find some lady. Take care of the baby. Take it
into
the
mouth. Oh, my God. Get out of here with your old-fashioned behavior.
Whoa. Which baby? Whose baby are you changing, Ro? What do you have to worry about? What are you planning for the future?
You have a bulldog to worry about.
That's true. I don't have to change the bulldog.
You have to pick up after
Yeah, although the bulldog made it into my dreams last night. That was really weird.
What happened in the dream?
I don't know. I was on an airplane, and there was a bulldog there. And then there was an animal that turned out not to be a dog. I thought it was a dog, and it turned out to be like a wild animal. It's like a cheetah or something. Because I'd read this story about a cheetah and a dog yesterday, and it was, I don't know. The whole thing got very weird. And you guys were all there. It was weird. The whole thing was weird.
Were we helping? Were we laughing?
No. And you know who's causing the most amount of trouble in that dream?
The dog?
Lauren Lapka.
I knew it was going to be me.
It was Lauren Lapka causing the most amount of trouble.
Lauren's riding the cheetah in the dream. She found a way to tame the cheetah.
Like kicking all the chairs.
She was like, you're not doing it right. You're not doing it right. So it was like that. I don't know. It was very, it was odd.
That is a very odd dream.
Yeah. And it was in a plane. It was a big, like, wide-body plane, except all the seats were, like, in a square. I don't know what any of this means.
But they
were all, like when the Bears went to London, you know, and they had they all lie flat, but they were all kind of lined up in a weird way.
They looked very comfortable.
Yeah. Well, it was, but it looked like it. And then I was next to a guy who was causing a problem, and Lauren and Kevin and you were, like, in the other corner of all of these seats. And this guy was causing a problem, and then all of a sudden, people just turn into, an animal in the middle of your dream? The guy turned into a cheetah, and I had a dog with me. The dog was on my side, and then all hell broke loose.
I wonder what it all means.
I know. Should we look at it as a compliment, as we made it into your dreams, that you love us, or that we cause problems for you?
I think that it was me trying to conquer the issue of a cheetah trying to eat my grand dog, and I was in the way of it, and you're all telling me I'm handling this wrong.
Basically, that's it.
I think it shows how much you love the dog, because you're worried that something could happen to the dog.
Maybe. That might be true, too.
But why on a plane?
I know. Oh, yeah. I know. Right?
Huh. I'm very curious, because I actually have a lot of dreams about plane crashes that terrify me.
When I have a dream about a plane crash, I'm not in the plane. A plane crashes right in front of me.
Oh, that's weird. Huh.
Yeah.
There's something there.
It's weird. Like you're saying that, I'm like, this has got to be a dream. This couldn't possibly be happening. And then you're like, in the dream, like, no, this is real. You're like, oh, my God, I got to call somebody. And then you wake up. Like, damn it. Huh. Oh, I have the scoop of a lifetime.
The scoop of a lifetime.
Oh, my God.
No, mine are always going down, but before they crash. Same with, like, dreams about buildings that are falling over. It's like the process of falling, but I always wake up before it crashes. It is so weird.
That is weird.
There's going to be some kind of rope. I just
want
to say,
and next time you're in one of my dreams, I want you to cooperate a little bit more. Oh, that's all.
Teamwork, guys.
I can't control your
dreams. I want all of you to cooperate more with my dreams. All right, thank you. This is the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, where Eric Rung is standing by. He's got news for you coming your way in 2 minutes. All right, thank you very much, Eric. I don't know if I heard that right, but did Demetrius Ivory actually use the word 10 to describe degrees? Is that what he just said?
I got to be honest. I was doing about four different things.
Don't tell me you weren't listening.
I'll hear you weren't listening.
Just go with the S.
Okay, yes.
I wouldn't have brought it up if it weren't true.
Yes,
he said the word 10. 10. 10 degrees.
Yeah, that's
you know what that is?
January.
That's 9 degrees warmer than one.
It's not good.
That's not early November temperature.
That's the late January, February temperatures.
All right. Who do I see about this?
I'd say Tom Skilling. I'd start there.
I might as well go to the top.
Yeah, I mean, the top of the weather world, you'd have to contact Skilling.
Mm-hmm.
He can do special things.
So
remember that tarp you wanted to put over the lake and stuff mm-hmm. like that?
I had a lot of plans.
It's bear weather, Ro. It's back. Maybe this will help him.
Okay. Matt Forte is joining us, one of my favorite Chicago Bears of all times. He, of course, now also is a member of the Team for Football After Show on NBC Sports Chicago. And he's the host of True versus Truth Podcast. Matt, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate it. Before we get into all the other mechanics here, I got to say that we're halfway through the season in terms of games played, right? And a lot of us had predictions that the Bears were going to have a winning football season. As a matter of fact, Luke Kanellis. Are you familiar with Luke Kanellis? You know, over at Fox, Matt? You familiar with him?
Yeah.
He said they were going to go 11-5. And I don't think that's going to happen. But is there, in your thought, is there any way to turn this thing around?
Well, 11-5 hope is definitely not going to happen. So thanks a lot, Lou, for predicting that. You know, I think that's why they, you know, have, you know, kind of gone down. It's because you can't put all these predictions on us before the season. You just got to watch and wait to see what happens. That way you won't be so let down. But there is one shining glimmer of hope, and it starts at the running back position. I feel like David Montgomery can be, and if they give him the ball, feed him the ball enough, he can give us some hope in this season, even though it's not looking like it will continue to improve. Because if you notice the last game, the last two games, he's the only guy who's been kind of out there making plays on the offensive side, besides Allen Robinson. And if we can run the ball effectively and not, I'm not talking like the spread offense and running it out of the gun, out of these cute formations and all this, I think if we do that and play some power football and do some play action, move the pocket, it'll take the burden off of Mitch. They're trying to make Mitch into something that he's not, and that's the problem. So if they can make it easy for him, it would help him out. That's the only glimmer of hope.
Right. Easier, right? Because, I mean, none of this is easy, but the idea that and everybody seems to be saying the same thing, is, you know, roll him out, get the pressure off of him, let him use his athleticism. He also seems to be one of those guys who is more accurate when he's on the move. I know it's counterintuitive, but that seems to be the case. So why not play to that strength? I think you're 100% right. They're trying to make him a pocket passer because that's what successful, you know, the most successful quarterbacks in the NFL are. But that's just not working out.
That's not him. That's not him. And that's never been him. He wasn't even that in college. And so, you know, I don't know why they expected him to grow into that or that they could change that, you know, in the last couple of years.
I want to ask you a totally separate question here for a second. So the True versus Truth podcast you do with your wife, Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
So who is True and who's Truth?
Now we're both Truth. You know, the name of it originated from just this sense of the culture right now. Like everybody kind of makes up their own truth and what's true to them and what they live by. And this relativism type of stuff where, you know, if it fits my lifestyle and I believe it to be true because it's what I like to do, then it becomes true. And so we take a biblical lens and, you know, kind of filter that, so to speak, and see what God says about it. So that's where the whole True versus Truth
name comes along.
Got it. I want to ask you in your household, though, when you're at home and it's you and your wife, who is true and who's truth? I've always found in my life that the woman is always truth and the guy is trying to be true. It's true, but no, this is the truth. Who lays down the law?
I will. When you're married, you know that your wife is always right.
Yes!
You
know, that's the point I'm trying to make.
Happy wife.
For the sake of argument, the wife is always right. But that doesn't mean it's the truth.
Uh-oh. So what kinds of topics do you talk about? I mean, what is...
Everything.
Is it sports as well? Know,
yeah, I mean, like different difficulties that a lot of people don't know that you may face in sports. I got a lot of teammates that, you know, have retired, and there's a lot of bad statistics that go on with retired, especially retired professional athletes, but specifically football. You know, 80% divorce, 80% broke, like all these bad statistics. And, you know, a lot of guys will, you know, retire and they don't know what to do exactly afterwards. They go into depression and different things. And you never know it unless, you know, they said something to you. So you want to shine a light on some of these dark areas. And that, you know, a lot of people kind of sweep under the rug and that they don't really talk about. But like in our last podcast that we launched last Thursday, one of the guys who's a chaplain for the Bengals, he said, you have to reveal it to heal it. And a lot of times we like to conceal these type of things and think that they'll just go away. But it ends up being worse if we don't.
You think the NFL does enough, Matt, to help players following their playing career?
Absolutely not. I say that because there are a lot of things that they offer and they, you know, they sound good. And but the follow-up process, which, you know, these are grown men. You're not going to walk everybody by the hand and, like, do these type of things. But once you retire, it's kind of like, you know, you don't exist anymore to them because you're not actually benefiting the game in some sort of way. You know, to them. So there could be, you know, some improvements on that. I won't say that it's absolutely terrible. It's a lot better than it has been in past years. But there can be a lot of things implemented to help guys who are struggling on the outside that, you know, and I think that might be a reason why a lot of guys, you know, don't want to say anything. They may be embarrassed about it or they just don't know where to find the help at.
Is the Players Association program getting better for guys too?
Yeah. I believe so. It's getting better. It's not all the way there, obviously. Everybody has improvement to grow and to improve on. But the Players Association, I mean, they're geared towards the players, obviously, and they do have a lot of different things and continuing education programs.
Sure. And also health, right? Know. That is such. I mean, obviously, you were a skills player. You're a running back. When you got the ball, you got hit. Right. And guys who took the kind of, and everybody does, but skills guys, you know, they got to be looking at you guys, also linemen too. I mean, basically everybody in the game, maybe not the kicker, has to be, you know, there's a lot of concern about making sure that your cerebral health and that your mental health and all of those things, you know, is stabilized, because that seems to be the first and perhaps most difficult and dynamic problem that exists for retiring football players.
Yeah, a lot of times when you get to professional sports, especially in football, and you get retired guys, they're kind of in uncharted territory right there. So it becomes uncomfortable for them, and they don't know what to expect. But then also with, you know, the concussion stuff and the CTE studies and things like that, you want to take a lot of caution on you know, health. And, you know, you got a lot of time, you retire in your 30s if you play a long career and you're blessed enough to do that. That's not very old. You got a long life ahead of you. So you want to be healthy, and you don't want some of the residual effects from football to, you know, lend to, you know, more surgeries and other type of, you know, health impairment. And
guys are getting out earlier than ever now, right? I mean, there's a lot of players who are like, listen, I made my money, probably not going to make this kind of money again, and my health and my welfare is more important.
Yeah, I've seen that too. You know, there's been guys who maybe 28, they played 8 years or something, or they played 7, and they they call it quits with the game. I mean, look at Andrew Luck this past year. The injuries took a toll on him, not only physically, but just mentally. He was just exhausted from the game. And that happens a lot. You see that a lot when guys get just burnt out on football. And that's part of the reason why after football is over, it's very hard on guys to assimilate and go into normal life, because football engulfs everything. And outside of it, they haven't really worked on any other skills, you know, to get, you know, to do something else besides that. But, and the tough part is that you have a lifetime ahead of you to do some of these things. But that's why it's important to have your identity and know who you are and move on from there.
All right.
Are we going to ask him about the changing tables? We started an argument about that earlier.
We don't have to get into this.
No, I mean, he's mad at you, actually, Matt, that you're starting this whole changing tables and men's bathrooms thing.
I know that they're important. I always wanted to deny they were there so that my wife would handle it. But that was the way that I was looking.
You're trying to take the easy way out.
Yeah, I know.
It's 2019. You got to change some diapers.
Yeah, well, luckily I don't.
You don't have any diapers to change yet until yours are.
Except mine, yeah. That's the only thing. All right, and that if you want.
Eventually, you have to change the diaper, right? Whether it's yours or.
Exactly. Right. And then hopefully that there is, there's somebody else changing your diaper, and then it's too late for everything. All right. what's your fortefoundation.org, by the way, where you can find out all the information about that stuff? That's a really cool name. What's your Forte Foundation? And Matt Forte, you can see him on NBC Sports Chicago Football After Show. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Let's check in now. Lauren Lapka tells us what's happening on the roadways.
This week on Chicago's Best, commuters rejoice. This episode dedicated to you. It's Chicago's Best off the L, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
All right. I was able to successfully dodge having to answer questions during that.
I love how you did that.
During that interview. I'm supposed to be asking the questions during an interview, but I knew the questions were going to come back at me because I took a very controversial position on changing tables in men's rooms.
Uh-huh. You did?
Yeah.
You said that we really don't belong. They don't belong
they
in
don't
men's
belong
rooms.
There. No.
Which was very controversial.
I must say, so how long have they been in men's rooms now? Like 15 years or something?
I don't think they're that. In terms of the majority of them, I don't know. I mean, you have to redo your room, your men's rooms.
Not really. You're just hanging on the wall. It's a pretty easy thing. It's just
there's more so just a universal single bathroom for things like that, I find.
Yeah, there's the family. And at Soldier Field, I noticed a couple weeks ago when I was there that they got a guard outside the family bathroom so drunks don't go into it. Right? So I like that. So you got the family changing. And I like that. Now that seems right. That seems okay. That's fine. Why do we need it in the men's room? Because I think in my life of this being, I don't know, whatever it's been, 15 years, I think I've seen one guy ever using the changing table in the men's room.
I would say in the newer restaurants that are in the last probably 15 years, they would put one in. But if you have an old school restaurant that's been around for a while, I don't think a lot of them have them. At least that's what my husband says. Maybe he's lying because he doesn't want to change diapers back in the day, but I don't know.
I just want to scare Eric Rung with this because he's got a baby on the way.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's going to make him feel completely uncomfortable when his wife says to him, "Hey, yeah, this one's yours," and then they hand you the baby, you know, like it's a football,
and it's very smelly at that moment.
Yeah,
he or she is very smelly.
Yeah, and you know it immediately. I mean, there's the whole thing. There's the whole smell check that people get, and when they're especially,
and you know what level of degree of smelliness you're dealing with.
You
as a parent, you figure that out. You know if this is a major blowout or if this is just sort of a regular
standard
BM.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Or just crankiness. Mm-hmm. I know the difference. I certainly know the difference with me.
Plus, when they get to be like two, it's a little more.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
I mean?
Like
an adult.
The infant different.
What did you feed him? So anyway.
Yeah.
So, Eric, where do you stand on the changing stations in men's rooms?
I'm good with them.
Oh, of course you are now.
See, he's such a nice guy.
I would have asked you a couple of months ago, where were you on this? And you would have, I don't believe in this at all. But now you're going to all act like, oh, my God.
I think tonight I'm just going to take every opposite stance of you.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wise choice.
It's a good plan. Not a terrible plan. All right. Well, I feel completely again. I got to go back to my dream now. I just got to go figure the whole thing out. Everybody was against me and my poor dog. That's all I know. Coming up on the program, Mark McKinnon joins us from the circus. This is the last week of this portion of the season for the circus. They're going to go on hiatus until January. But they've got a lot of interesting stuff coming up. And what they've already done, I want to play a piece of tape from Steve Bannon that was really, I think, life-altering. If you don't watch The Circus, you should. If you don't have Showtime, use your grandmother's password, because that'll be good until January 1st. There is a moment where Steve Bannon was on The Circus 2 weekends ago, and he talked about what he thinks. Steve Bannon, whatever you feel about him personally, that you cannot deny that he's a brilliant guy and that he may be an evil genius, but he's a genius, and he's figured some things out. And what his take is on what all of this means that's going on in Washington right now, how it all boils down, is startling. Startling. So we will play that for you and for Mr. McKinnon and have him respond to that, because it's a very, you know, this thing is moving very, very, very fast. And we're not going to spend all day on it, but it is a moment that we should have. And Mark McKinnon's always very entertaining when we have him on the program. So all of that is coming your way. Oh, and then the 5 o'clock hour, of course, top five of five. And then why you're going to lose your grandmother's password for Netflix and for HBO and Showtime and all the rest of that.
That's going to affect a lot of people.
Yep.
This whole password sharing crackdown.
Yep. That's a great, 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 great story. It's a story for our times, I believe. And yep. I would like to take back my passwords, because I know everybody's using my passwords and I'm sick and tired of it.
Maybe you'll get blocked and all the people who are borrowing your passwords
that is
will get
my
to use
oh,
it.
Oh, man, that would be so funny.
Oh, what is wrong with you people? Mark McKinnon is with us. MCAT, as he's known on The Circus on Showtime, the greatest 30 minutes about American politics and, I would even argue, American history that comes to you every week. At least this will be the last week, however, of this particular run. And then you're going to pick it up back in January. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We'll pick up in January, and then we'll be up, you know, most of the year next year to cover the election, which is how this all started.
I cannot imagine how difficult these last couple of weeks have been, because things are moving so quickly during the impeachment hearings and during all of the different machinations that are going on. You're trying to do that as well as the Democrats all trying to get into position for Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina.
Exactly right. Last week we did a whole episode about Iowa because it's so critical this time. And there was this big, you know, annual dinner that they do every 4 years that is the kind of like what's the breakout moment for Obama and kind of signals the last 100 days. And it's very interesting what's happening over there. But of course, now we're back here this week in D.C. In fact, I just left the Hill where I was hoping that John Bolton might show up. But of course, he didn't. But he practically, you know, was advertising that he'd be happy to come with a subpoena, but now the House, apparently, you just told me, as usual, you're ahead of me on the news. I guess the House is not going to subpoena.
Yeah. Why do we think that the House will not subpoena? They have a lot of testimony other than his, but he's key, isn't he?
I talked to Steve Cohen yesterday in Memphis, who's on the Judiciary Committee and kind of a key player in the House. And basically what he said is, they don't want to do anything more to drag this out, which is what the Republicans want. And basically what he said is, he said, listen, we've got the story. We've got all the witnesses we need. We don't need any more. Now, it's a little unfortunate because I think that John Bolton would be a significant witness because he just has such credibility and standing as a longtime warrior in Washington, D.C. And a Republican of rich history who served a lot of different administrations. And I think his testimony would be seen as inviolable and credible by everyone. It'd be impossible to impeach his testimony, which of course doesn't mean they wouldn't try to. But I just think on this issue, and we know that he had concerns about it, it sure would be interesting to listen to him.
He's patient zero. I really truly believe that when he was removed from his position at the White House, or removed himself from the position of the White House, however you want to look at that, and there was a contretemps between he and the president, I think that John Bolton's one of those guys just not going to go quietly into the night. I actually think he is responsible for a lot of the trouble that we see here.
I think that's right, and I've been comparing him to like a great white shark that's circling the White House, and my view is the White House is going to need a bigger boat when he decides to tell a story. I've also heard the theory, you know, he's writing a book. So there's also the theory that he wants to wait to, you know, maximize that power of that book. But I also feel like he's just, even if you don't like the guy, he's a truth teller and has principle, which, of course, I think is why he left the White House. So, again, I just think in terms of this story, he's such an important component of it, just from what little we know, and can only imagine what we don't know.
If he does write the book, would he be available for a January or February impeachment? I mean, that's a great way to sell your book, I suppose.
Maybe by January we can get him on this radio show with us.
Yes, I think that would be important. I do think there's something odd about the guy. There always has been. I mean, yeah, he's a truth screamer, but it's his truth often. And sometimes that doesn't exactly line up with a lot of the other underlying facts, but he is...
Oh, that's the irony. He could become a hero to Democrats who have vilified him forever.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, maybe. I am more and more convinced, the clearer it is, that there are very few good guys in these.
That's a good point.
You see these guys in uniform who are being paraded up there, and I feel very bad, Vindman specifically, I feel very badly for him. I mean, here's a, you know, really well-regarded war hero, and then as soon as you step out of a narrative that makes the White House comfortable, all of a sudden, you know, you're a liar, you're a never-Trumper, you're this, you're that. I mean, the whole thing is kind of crazy. Before we get to the Democrats, I want to ask you about this wackadoodle trial of the century going on. It's the United States versus Roger Stone, and one of the key witnesses is former Trump advisor Steve Bannon.
You know, they're both such characters. I call them flavors. You know, they've both been on our show a bunch because they're deep in the heart of the Trump story. And you know, Roger Stone is just one of the most nefarious characters ever in politics, and he would welcome that description. This is a guy who has Richard Nixon tattooed on his back. And the only thing that Roger Stone hates is irrelevance. So I think he's actually probably looking forward to the trial where he's center stage once again. But, you know, it'll be fascinating to watch.
I don't know why he's wearing Alex Wagner sunglasses, but he is definitely. Can I go back to Bannon for just a second? Bannon sat down with your John Heilman and said something really startling. He said there will be a trial in the Senate, but there will have to be, with Republicans who will be seeking political cover, a negotiated settlement to acquit.
There's no doubt that there is going to be a negotiated acquittal. For Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell and the established order are going to take their pound of flesh. This is my whole point. The arc of Trump's presidency will change in this process. There's nothing more important. This will engulf everything.
It's an interesting thought. I don't know what that negotiated settlement could be, but just the idea of something negotiated this side of impeachment could be an interesting outcome.
For him to say it so definitively and so publicly is kind of chilling, I would imagine, for people at the White House.
Yeah, that's why he's I like to have him on, because he's candid, and he'll obviously echo kind of Republican strategy and talking points a lot, but he also is incredibly candid sometimes and tells the truth on things like we asked him about. You know, the strategy of Republicans trying to impeach the character of people like Vindman. And he said that dog won't hunt. He said that is just wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so thank you for that, because he's right on that point. But we get people from the leftward side of the spectrum who scream whenever we put him on. You know, why do you give that guy a platform? Well, we give him a platform because he's a fascinating guy. He's smart as hell. He's interesting as can be. And he provides insight into that universe, which I think is important for everyone to see.
Sure.
And how Donald Trump thinks and how the Trump loyalists think. And he's got interesting strategic insights like that one, which we hadn't heard from anyone.
That's true. All right, let's talk about the Democrats. Last week, they were in Iowa at this big event that's held every 4 years, in which the candidates all speak in an arena and all of the staff members for those candidates show up. And it's a gigantic dog and pony show with each candidacy trying to prove that they're better organized and have a better message than the other guys.
The dinner is it's an interesting early kind of test run of everybody's strength in Iowa. It was really interesting to see how everybody played out that night.
Yeah, it's kind of a visually stunning event, too, because it's in this gigantic stadium and all the political theater. But one of the things I noticed was that voters or caucus goers in Iowa are not really comfortable with the big health care plan. Will that be the figurative death of the Bernie and Warren candidacies?
Elizabeth Warren has shown some cracks. She's clearly the front runner now, but is showing vulnerabilities, and particularly on this plan, which, you know, people like Pete Buttigieg, who's really moving in Iowa now, he's third and even second in some polls, you know, because they're really raising serious questions about the plan itself, the cost of the plan, the fact that it takes away choice. And she may have peaked early. because we're going to have, you know, at least 100 days now to debate, you know, the price tag, is that a real price tag? And if it, you know, I think most people think that's not even the realistic price tag, but even if it is, how in the hell do you pay for that? And it's just raising a lot of important questions. But it was a really interesting evening. I mean, Biden just looked so flat. Warren was kind of defensive, actually. You could tell that she's, you know, just on point now and showing some cracks. And Pete Buttigieg had a terrific night and was, he had a great speech, which didn't surprise anybody really, because he's a great speaker, but he was incredibly well organized. He had as many people, maybe more than Warren. I mean, he looked like he had a quarter of the arena out there. So he's on fire out there, and it's interesting to see if he does well there and maybe, you know, can take that to New Hampshire. How do they do in the South? You know, Biden is obviously still strong in South Carolina, maybe Nevada. But so, it's stacking up to be an interesting race. By the way, just one other footnote. I just came from Kentucky, where we covered the outcome of that Kentucky governor's race. And it was really interesting because Matt Bevins, who is the Republican governor up for reelection, first of all said, as did the president when he came down and did a rally for him the night before, they basically said this is a referendum on Donald Trump and impeachment. And they lost. And Matt Bevin had declared that he was 6-10, maybe 12 points ahead. And then Donald Trump comes down and they lose the next day. Not a good look for them in Kentucky.
Let's quickly talk about Virginia before we let you go. Big loss for Republicans in state house elections there on Tuesday. Has Donald Trump lost the suburbs? Not so much on policy, but maybe on antics?
Oh, I think there's evidence of that everywhere, and that's probably, you know, if the scales get tipped, that's going to be where it tips. It's going to be suburban. It's going to be women. We just saw a lot of signs of that this week. That's where there's going to have to be a course correction for the president to prevail next November. But that he's going to have a lot of work to do, as we saw from the results this week.
Mark McKinnon, thanks very much. You can see The Circus on Showtime on Sunday. It's the last episode of this run. They'll be back in January for basically the rest of the election cycle. Lauren Lapko, what's happening on the roadways? News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Top of the hour. Eric Rung is in there where he's fretting. He's got thoughts.
He does.
Yes. Very nervous about having to change a baby.
Yes. Change diaper. One quick note about politics. I know you just finished that conversation we heard with Mark McKinnon mm-hmm. from The Circus. Michael Bloomberg preparing to enter the presidential race.
Oh, for
trending
God.
Right
oh,
now. The for... billionaire not concerned that there weren't enough moderate candidates and threatened to get in and apparently set to announce that he will get in, according to The Hill and other political.
As a Democrat or as an independent?
I don't know. I think it's as a Democrat is what they're. Let's see.
What AP is saying is that Bloomberg announced earlier this year that he would not seek the Democratic nomination, but in a statement today, his political advisor is saying that he's just as Anna said that there isn't a Democratic presidential candidate that is not well positioned to defeat Trump. So it doesn't say one way or the other. He's talked about running as an independent, but he didn't see a path forward.
Updated Eric by ABC News just minutes ago. He's planning to submit his name for the Democratic presidential primary.
There we go.
In Alabama,
because Friday is the deadline to do so in that state. You wouldn't get on the ballot unless you had met that deadline. And he says he hasn't decided whether to run for president, but is actively considering it.
County courthouse in Alabama. You know, why now? Who is this man coming in here to ask us about getting on the ballot?
What a fancy suit you have.
Well, I don't believe I've seen your type right here. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, and Jeff Sessions, I guess that's why they announced that Jeff Sessions said he's going to run for the Senate. So he has to announce
that's
it
right.
as well.
That's why that came out.
Yes.
Bloomberg telling everyone to put their sodas away. Remember his whole soda
ban?
That was
yeah.
not allowed in New York.
Yeah.
Sugary
that's,
drinks.
I, you know what?
Get rid of them, Alabama.
Well, that's very interesting. It does. Listen, Joe Biden, and not the answer. Joe Biden is, whether it was fair or not fair, Joe Biden wasn't really well positioned to start. And then I think that the whole Hunter Biden situation knocked the credibility down just enough to make it almost impossible. And then you do have these two Looney Tunes. I'm sorry. I just got to say it. This is just my position. I'm sorry. But the two Looney Tunes out here, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bernie. That are, you know, up there, they want to tell $21 trillion she wants to spend on screwing up our healthcare system.
You got Bill Gates even saying he might even vote for Trump because of the billionaire tax that she wants in order to use to pay for that healthcare system.
Yeah, I mean, even in America, it's like, well, how does it affect me, right? I mean, that's actually in the world, that's how it goes. How does this affect me? So really being affected by the billionaire tax, I don't have to worry about that. But all I know is that the healthcare system already has got some problems. The wait times are super long. Even if you are well insured, which a lot of Americans are, those with good insurance are having a problem.
Well, the out-of-pocket costs are up, and the payment just even for premiums is going up year to year to year. More and more is coming out of your pocket for just having the health insurance, and then you see those out-of-pocket expenses go up, too, when you actually do get sick.
Right. And there was just a story today, as a matter of fact, about millennials, these two right here in front of us, that there are 73 million millennials in America. And there was a health study that was done by Blue Cross Blue Shield about how healthy they are. Right. So the oldest millennial at this point would be 1981. So what would that be?
They're
that
like
would be
39,
almost. Yeah.
40.
Almost 40. Mm-hmm. Right. 38.
They always say millennials, so, yeah, are pushing 40.
Right. So 81 and 96. So that millennials are less likely to go in for maintenance health issues, you know, to get regular exams and do those kinds of things.
Things haven't started to break down yet.
Right. Unless they're not seeking preventative care. Although, I don't know anybody under 40 who really does.
You right. Know?
I mean, I don't think that's just millennials.
Yeah, I just hated going to the doctor.
I think the
in my 30s and 20s.
Gen Xers or whatever the hell I am with the same problem.
Yeah.
And then the other issue is that it's harder and harder and harder now to find, if you're not in the system, it's harder to find insurance that really fits because the deductibles are so high on some of the basic insurance. So that is a mess. And then all of a sudden, Elizabeth Warren's going to fix that by spending $21 trillion. And as Saturday Night Live pointed out, I thought it was a really good point, whether it's $21 trillion or $42 trillion, we're just making the number up. They don't really know. Once you get into the trillions, they have no idea.
It's a big number.
How are you going to spend that money? And do you think somehow that it's all going to be the best health care for everybody? We don't have enough hospitals. We don't have enough medical personnel to do that.
Large employers predict that the cost of covering health insurance for workers and their families, so if you have a family plan, will hit an average of $15,000 in 2020, an increase of 5%. According to CNBC.
So there you have it. And so, I don't know. I don't feel as though Bernie or Elizabeth Warren, and they do seem to be the lion's share of the primary voting polls that are coming out. If you add the two of them together, they're at 40-something percent.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get everybody else out of the way. I don't know why they're not getting out of the way now. And it does appear that Pete Buttigieg is the one moderate who has broken through. He's beating Biden in both Iowa and New Hampshire.
How about that?
He won't be doing that in South Carolina or Nevada, though. I can promise you that.
But I don't know that Bernie and maybe Elizabeth Nevada. Warren do well in South Carolina and those
states. No, Joe Biden does well there. That's his plan. That's if he gets there. Right? I mean, it's like Joe Biden is like, he's like walking in like in a pool. You know, it's like you got, if you're ever walking a pool and then there's somebody walking up on the concrete next to you,
mm-hmm.
they're going to get there faster, right? No matter what. It's like all of a sudden you're being weighed down. There's nothing you can do. And that's the way he looks. He looks like the whole time he's like, I can't get through this. I can't. My teeth are really bright and straight, but I can't get through this. His teeth are like 2 years old. And he's, what is he, 76 or something? 75, whatever he is. I mean, and, you know, listen, who doesn't, you know, Joe, you know, he's given a lot to America. I get it. I'm not trying to take anything away from him other than the fact that he's not going to be the president of the United States. And if it were against, if he got past the Democratic process, the primary process, maybe. I mean, I think that the polls indicate right now that, and again, we're a year out, right? It's a year. It's 52 weeks from 2 days ago. 52 weeks and 5 days is the election. A lot can happen. Hell, a lot can happen in 10 days. Who knows what's going to happen next? when these public hearings start and what other shoes drop. And now the story today that there was somebody in Pence's office that said that Pence was willing to consider, you know, that break glass in case of emergency amendment. Was it 25th Amendment or whatever, that you remove a president for being a nut? And that was kind of a... So now they're trying to throw Pence under the bus? I'm telling you, man, I think that Pence is going to be off the ticket either this spring or the following spring, if Donald Trump wins, and Ivanka will be named vice president.
Oh, come on.
Oh, you really? You want to take that bet?
I do. I would take that bet.
Okay.
Now, would there be a shift in the VP? Yeah, I think that's very possible.
Why wouldn't he give it to his family? Don Jr.?
I don't think that any of them would want it, first of all, but I don't think he'd give it.
Oh, okay. Don Jr., he doesn't want to be vice president? I think he does.
It'll never happen.
I think, okay.
I'll take that bet.
Jared?
I'll take the bet.
Okay, take the bet. All right, you're on. Pinky swear, whatever goes on there. All right, we got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 little minutes.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Our new horn section in there. Just jamming. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson announced he is stepping down as superintendent. News conference today, a couple hours before the police spokesman confirmed the speculation that the 59-year-old will be retiring.
So reducing these shootings in the city that I love has been one of the greatest accomplishments of my career. And it's with that in mind that I want to announce my retirement today. It's time for someone else to pin these four stars to their shoulders. These stars can sometimes feel like you're carrying the weight of the world. But I'm confident that I leave CPD in a better place than when I became superintendent.
Wow. And the other thing that came up was in a one-on-one interview we did with Ben Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a pretty startling revelation.
You know, I had a family member killed by a Chicago police officer, you know, when I was a teenager. Yeah. You know, so I know what that feels like. You know, I've just never talked about it much because I don't want to rip that Band-Aid off for my cousin. You know, so I'm acutely aware of the racial divide that's been involved in this city for decades.
Also said he remembers seeing his dad handcuffed when he just went outside to see what was going on when there were police in his neighborhood. And said that he's the kind of kid who he could have gone against the city, against the police, but chose to be part of the solution.
Right.
Really remarkable speech and heartfelt today by the superintendent.
And he took over in a really difficult time. He took over in the teeth of the Laquan McDonald protests and the beginning of the revelation of all the information around that, and then had to be the superintendent during the trial.
Right.
Jason Van Dyke, the police officer.
No question. A difficult time for the city.
Had to bury four police officers.
Yep.
In 1 year, last year. It was a really, 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 it was a very tough run. And like all these guys who serve, and, you know, sure, people have their opinions or criticisms of any of these guys who do it. But unless you, as he pointed out, you put on that uniform every day and you go out and you walk a beat like Chicago police officers do, patrolmen do, as sergeants and detectives and all the rest of the people up and down the line, including the civilians who have to manage all of the technology and all the other things that go on in the Chicago Police Department. But the person who's got those four stars on their shoulder, they bear the entire responsibility for everything. And they have to answer to a mayor who often is like a cartoon character, screaming blue-veined at, you know, what have you done to my city? It's a very, very stressful, very, very difficult job. And I'm going to be very, and I think we should all give Eddie Johnson great thanks.
Great thanks for
what he did.
His career of service.
Right.
31 years, Chicago police officer and superintendent at a very difficult time.
Right. All right. Checking in at
number four.
Cam Newton's days with the Panthers appear to be numbered. Oh, I'll take him. Wait, do we get him? Carolina on Tuesday placed the veteran quarterback who's been dealing with an injury in his left foot, has been placed on injured reserve, and the Newton rumor has yet to really take shape here. But Stephen A. Smith, you know, this is, if there's ever a guy who's going to jump to a conclusion.
I think that the Chicago Bears should trade for Cam Newton. They need somebody with that moxie. They need somebody with that athletic ability. They need somebody with heart. They don't need somebody that's still recovering from being booed. The mental makeup. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Mr. Trubisky. I'm just calling it like I see it. The mental makeup that he seems to have does not seem to be made for Chicago. I think somebody like Cam would be better. I think he needs a fresh start. I think Carolina already has it. With Kyle Allen, you roll with that.
What are the chances we get Cam?
Well, it's not going to be this year. He's on injured reserve, but he signed
through. We'd put him in a cast. He'd be just as good.
Yeah, maybe next year, but definitely not happening this year.
What do you think about that?
I mean, sure, I guess. I mean, it just seems like people are grasping for anything at this point.
Yes.
Because of how bad the offense has been. It really feels to me, like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Mitch Trubisky is game one starter next season. I really wouldn't. Because Pace and Nagy and Trubisky are all tied together here. And, like, even this season, there's no point of putting Chase Daniel in. There's not. You might as well ride this out. It's not like you really have that much hope, Chase Daniel.
But you don't have a first-round pick for next year. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do you any good to tank. Right?
Well, I don't think they're going to tank. I'm just saying, if they put Chase Daniel in, I mean, you think he's going to lead you to 8 straight victories and get you into the playoffs? Not going to happen. So, you know, I think it's an option to explore next year for sure. Yeah. Former MVP.
Super Bowl appearance, right?
Super Bowl appearance.
Chunky soup?
Chunky soup.
You know, when you get the chunky soup commercial, and he's also a yogurt guy.
That's big. Yogurt's good
yogurt's
for you.
Nice.
He eats well, maybe.
Nutritional benefits.
Sure. It's got the stuff in it that you know, makes you go to the bathroom better.
Fiber.
No, it's got whatever, acidophilus.
Probiotics.
Thank you. Probiotics. I knew I could always.
It just is good bacteria for your gut.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes you go to the bathroom.
Well, it did for me.
It just aligns everything.
Yeah, please tell us more.
Well, yeah, it calmed things down. I don't know. It's like a whole thing.
How do we get Cam Newton to Rose bathroom habits. Lovely.
He took the acidophilus, and for him, it was a bathroom nightmare.
I'm just saying that Cam Newton changed my colonic outcome. That's all I'm saying.
So you're already a fan.
I'm a fan. Right. I've always been a fan of his. I think I watched him his entire career. I watch him going back to college. Right? I mean, remember, there was a little controversy about his dad and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was in college and he was graduating, and there was all kinds of stuff. Right? When he was coming out, was, you know, were they talking to agents before they were supposed to be talking? Now it's all okay. There are no rules anymore about anything. But Cam Newton is a little on the older side, but, you know, I think that's a guy that can take you somewhere. He certainly can. He can connect the ball. See, the ball, let me just give you an example. When the ball's in Cam Newton's hand and then he throws it, it often ends in the hands of the receiver, or at least near the receiver, within a couple feet of the receiver, which is, I think, if you're within 2 feet, it's a lot better than what we're seeing now.
I think a ton depends on what happens these final 8 games. Because if they do show hope and they do show signs of you know, flashes like we saw last year, does that give enough faith to Ryan Pace in Matt Nagy and Mitch Trubisky? So, I mean, it's kind of sad that the next 8 games is an evaluation process rather than all of us pulling for the Bears to win.
The Bears are going to have some money to spend because they're not going to be spending any money on a first-round pick.
What about Tom Brady? Has anyone thrown his name out there yet? I'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, the Los Angeles Chargers have thrown out his name.
Somebody did on one of these dumb hot take shows on ESPN. Did throw that idea out there. Yeah.
Not for the Bears, though. He's not coming here. He's going to L.A.
Well, that was what somebody threw out there.
Yeah, but they're wrong. He's going to L.A. Cam Newton, because that was the big story, that he's looking at a place in L.A.
Really?
Yeah. Did you
I like how you're following all the Tom Brady stuff. I didn't get the Google alert on that, so thank you.
You're welcome. And Cam Newton's coming here now. This is my plan.
It's all coming together.
That's all coming together. What could possibly go wrong? You know what? I got the whole thing figured out. Let's find out what's happening in the 3-2-1. But first, we have to find out what's happening on the roadway. Here is Lauren Lapka. Top 5 of 5 continues. We have work 2.
Number 3.
Every person takes road rage differently. Some respond with the blast of the horn, others with the flick of a finger. Some, like this woman you're about to hear, answer in a way that leaves the receiver as well as the internet in a bewildered state. A woman was recently captured on camera verbally attacking a Lyft driver and the passenger, Chelsea Klein, on New York City's West Side Highway. The unidentified woman who claims the driver cut her off has become the latest target of social media after Klein's video racked up millions of views since its posting.
I'm sorry. Really sorry.
You are?
No, it's my fault.
It is your fault.
Yeah, I know it's my fault. That's why I'm saying sorry.
She thinks it's cute that her driver almost hit my kids, and she thinks she needs to take a video of it. Instead of apologizing like a saint.
So stopping in the middle of the road is going to help?
You being a is going to help?
I didn't say anything.
I don't know. Calm down.
It's okay. I'm sorry.
He apologized.
It's my fault.
He apologized.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what? That didn't upset me. But
sorry.
That told me to calm down? What I'd like you to do is apologize instead of being a
You're calling me sorry, but you're calling me. Set an example.
I'm sorry. My kids can't hear me calling you a.
The window's open.
They can't hear me because they're listening to Kids Bop.
Thank God. Thank God for Kids Bop.
Yeah.
She actually sticks out her tongue at one point, too. It's not a great look.
She's now Kids Bop Karen, is who that woman is.
Oh, that's what they call
I wonder now, does she have a job she's going to get fired from for this? Because, you know, that's the next thing. That's what happens now.
I don't think she'd be a great coworker.
No.
Don't make a mistake around Karen.
Neighbor, someone on the condo board, you know, a person in front of you at Starbucks. I mean, these are all places we do not want Kids Bop Karen to be. Some people are just not good citizens. You know, they just don't get along well with others.
Or they're having, like, issues going on in their life, and they just decide to take it out on the wrong people.
Yeah,
that happens too.
They can't hear me because they're listening to Kids Bop.
Oh, the voice. Like, why does she almost go Valley Girl in her arguing voice?
I don't know. I don't understand anything anymore.
No.
I refuse to answer further questions. Here we go.
Number 2.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble.
Remember this?
Of course, yes.
Hours after revealing the January 31st release date of her third studio album, Treat Myself, Meghan Trainor. Did I say Trainor? I'm Trainor. Hey, Meghan Trainor treated fans to a brand new track last night called Working On It. Also featuring vocals by Lennon Stella and Sasha Sloan.
Who?
I know exactly what I thought as I read those words. It's the third single released from Trainor's upcoming 15-track, Treat Myself.
You say I'm beautiful, and I say you're full of it. Nothing personal, I'm still not used to this. But I'm working on it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You don't like that one?
She's kind of a one-hit wonder for me, because I really, really prefer this.
Kind of kids boppy?
Yeah.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, about that bass.
I'd like to play this underneath the woman who's complaining. It'll make me feel better.
Slowly turning it up.
I was honestly hoping for a Kids Bop Karen. I was like, maybe they just start blasting Kids Bop to drown out the yelling. Oh, boy.
All right, here we go. And finally...
Number 1.
This is in Washington State. There was an adorable dog that is filmed howling at the top of his lungs and having the time of his life in the back of a car after he was given anesthetic at the vet.
Oh.
Scout, the golden retriever, developed a hematoma, which is a collection of clotted blood after an injury in a blood vessel, right? Forcing him to have a little bit of surgery. But it was okay, because it all got worked out in the surgery. But as Scout was making his full recovery, he might have just gotten a little stoned.
Not looking so good, honey.
It's like a slow motion howl.
I don't think they use too much there. Is it possible? Poor thing.
I mean, I don't want it. It's almost a situation like, you know, when people video their kids after they have like oral surgery or something, and the kids don't know what it is, and they're like crying and all. And I always feel like that's abusive. I kind of now feel like this is abusive. I kind of feel like I feel really bad for Scout.
Speaking up for the dogs.
Yeah. That dog doesn't deserve internet fame for this.
They don't care.
Right. Scout's fine now, but still, yeah, that's probably
true. It will haunt him for the rest of his life, and he's only 4 years old, so, so he'll have to worry about his internet search history.
Oh. Scout, I'm with you. Who's a good boy?
The top five at five.
Friend Ian Schur is joining us from CNET. Everything you never wanted to know about the internet or a computer or something, CNET can tell you. That's the most important place in America to go find out things. Mm-hmm. Because, the digital world is ruining our lives. Let's just be honest.
And changing everything, for sure.
Right. If you want to find things out, that's why I think the AM radio. Just trust the AM radio. Forget about the internet. All right. Let's talk about it. I love this story. That now, Ian, all my relatives who have stolen my passwords for my over-the-top providers, whether it's Netflix or Hulu. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about it this week. I got all of those things. I don't even know why I have them. And I would love to know how much I'm paying in total. I know what I'm just paying for my cable and my satellite alone, and it's driving me nuts. But coming up on the first of the year, right, they have a new system that's not going to allow people to share these passwords anymore. Are they?
Essentially, no. A lot of people have been sharing passwords. There's estimates out there that 10% of Netflix users don't pay. That comes out to about 13 million people, maybe nearly 14 million.
That's really low.
Well, that's $135 million that Netflix doesn't get each month. So on average. So that's a pretty big deal. And look, HBO deals with this as well. Hulu deals with this. Every streaming service so far has dealt with this. So now Netflix, if they're going to crack down on it, we don't know exactly how, but you know, one way you could imagine is that they can tell where you're connecting from, whether you're from other parts of the country and, you know, someone from California is on at the same time as someone from New York on the same account. So we'll see what they end up doing. You know, in the past, they've limited the number of streams you could have at a given time. That's been a way to cut things down. It's interesting, but you know, it underscores how really all of these companies are realizing they have to push us all to pay them, right? We all want their stuff. We just have to pay them now.
Well, there's all these new streaming services coming into the market, and Netflix has got to be feeling the pressure from that, and maybe they've reached some sort of saturation point with the number of people who have Netflix. I guess it's a good way for them to sort of pick up some extra revenue. But they say they're going to do
it.
Or what do you think? What do you think's behind it? They just sort of reached a boiling point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely, I think there's frustration generally among a lot of these companies. I mean, you know, as someone who has worked for subscription service companies before, and, you know, CBS, who pays my paychecks, they also have a streaming service. One thing I've run across all the time is that all of these companies tend to feel very frustrated that they feel like they're being cheated by their customers, right? And they don't ever want to feel that way. And I think that part of it is trying to come up with, okay, how can we convince them the best way to use our stuff? So, for example, Apple found that, you know, one of the ways it made the music industry work and come into the digital age was that they stopped us all from having to buy CDs, right? We were able to buy songs individually, 99 cents a song through iTunes. And then the streaming services really got popular. It became, you know, 10 bucks a month, you get all the music you want. So I think part of this is just convincing us all that there's value and convincing us that, hey, it's worth it to pay for this. Because I think most of us would pay for it if we really felt like there was value. And a lot of people think, oh, I'll just share it among my family. It's no big deal. And I think Netflix has to make it clear to everybody that, no, that is a big deal. We feel like you're stealing from us.
Right. Well, it's really, we know when the corporation goes, you're stealing from me. You know, people don't really ever feel sorry for them. But
no, it's tough.
Yeah, it really is tough. And, you know, you stop because I know this to be the case. I would get emails from my iTunes account when there were nefarious people,
mm-hmm.
and I shall refer to my relatives as nefarious people.
Are they unnamed or named?
I shall not name them at the moment. Oh. But these nefarious people were charging stuff to me on my account. Right? And all of a sudden, they're renting a movie here. They're renting, you know, something is going on there. And because, you know, that's the beauty of this is that you can put an alert in your system that tells you when something is happening. Right? So,
yeah.
That's what they really need to do. Now, I guess, I get that Netflix and all of these guys, because think of what Netflix does. You know, you don't have commercials, which I, you know, Ian, I think is a sin not to have commercials, right? I mean, because we're in broadcasting. But,
I was going to say, it pays all of our bills.
Right, exactly. It's totally true. But the Netflix experience is you get first run stuff. I mean, they pay for these incredible series and movies and other things that they get on, they put on first. That's how, you know, so the $135 million a month, they're like, what do they need that for? Well, because when they're building a show like The Queen isn't Netflix, that's the one who was doing The Irishman with Martin Scorsese, right? They paid the whole bill on that movie.
Netflix spent $12 billion in content last year.
Right.
They expect it to grow to $15 billion this year.
And so they're losing $1.6 billion, they say. This is their number. $1.6 billion a year to this fraud. So that's...
Yeah.
Now, so what... All right, so
it's
now...
Tough.
Well, let's talk about this. So if after the first of the year, let's talk about the effective use of this. Because I know sometimes they say they're going to do this, and then you're like, I still am using grandma's Netflix password.
Still works.
Yeah, because, well, I'm using grandma's credit card. She doesn't really watch Netflix, but you know how this thing goes.
But I wonder if this is going to force the grandmas to then contact the millennials in the family and say, hey, I'm cutting you off because I don't want to get in trouble with Netflix.
Hey, don't beat up on millennials too much. There are plenty of people doing it the other way.
Right. There's a lot of grandparents, right?
From
that's
the
true.
Millennials.
Yeah, no. That's totally true.
Don't do that.
Totally
true.
Well,
how can you call grandma and tell her you're cutting her off? You can't do that.
No, you got it.
You can't do that.
Grandma, I'm sorry. You're not going to be able to watch The Crown anymore. It's over.
That must be another way they figure it out because they have two distinctly different viewing patterns. You got, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious sometimes.
Well, you might have multiple people in your household because I always say I've got 30 people living in my household.
Right.
So that's how I work that. In case there's a problem. All right, so what's going to happen here? So how are they going to know? What is the system? I know smart TVs are going to be the first ones affected here.
Well, this is different. So smart TVs are actually... So there are two things happening on Netflix this week. One is trying to cut down on the number of people effectively. We'll not use the word stealing, but whatever you want to call it from Netflix.
Mm-hmm, borrowing.
And then the other thing... Borrowing. And then the other thing is that Netflix has, you know, they were one of the first app providers to have an app put into smart TVs. And you go back like 10 years and the smart TVs that were sold back then had Netflix on them. Some of them were sold with a Netflix button built into the remote. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Those buttons cost a lot of money, by the way. Netflix had to pay a lot of money for those buttons to be put on there. I'm not kidding. So what ended up happening is that, of course, these TVs get old in the tooth. They no longer work as well. Maybe they're not getting their software updated. And now Netflix has put out a statement saying that a certain number of smart TVs, they haven't said who or what, which made everyone anxious, but a certain number of them are just going to stop working and that you won't be able to access Netflix that way anymore. It's frustrating because this underscores how, you know, when it used to be you bought a TV, it worked until it died. And now it's, you know, you bought a TV, but it only works as long as they're willing to support it.
Right.
And
yeah,
it reminds me of, like, there's a really funny thing that happened a few years ago. Samsung was really kind of like, everyone loved this idea. They built a refrigerator that had your calendar built into it. So it had a screen on the refrigerator. You looked at the refrigerator. There was a screen with your calendar. And you could just see, okay, little Jimmy's soccer practice is today. Well, a couple of years ago, after that came out, Google changed all the code for how their calendars worked, and suddenly the refrigerator broke, and no one was able to fix it. So you had a refrigerator that you spent like $3,000 on.
Right, for little Jimmy and his soccer practice.
So it's frustrating when this stuff happens, and it's something the tech industry has to kind of get their heads wrapped around because this can't keep happening.
You know,
but this is one of those instances.
Ian, maybe you can explain this to me, because I had a weird thing happen. As people on this program know, we just spend a lot of time at my house there's a lot of alcohol in the house, and I think that's why they come over to my place. But I have a lot of TVs,
it's because we
too.
Like you.
I don't think so. And we have a lot of
and
TVs.
And a Netflix account.
And a Netflix account.
He does share.
And a Hulu. And no, I don't. No, well. I don't. And I have all of them. I don't even know what I'm paying for anymore. There's so many of them. But I have all those things, and I'm afraid I have the most amazing amount of FOMO when it comes to televised events. So I have it all, and I now had a TV that started to act really weird. It was like a really kind of old school picture problem, and I'm like, how does this possibly happen? So I called the store that I bought it from, and I'm like, hey, I described the problem to the sales guy, and he was like, yeah, well, it sounds like you need a new TV. And I'm like, I just bought this TV. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, where did you buy it? And they were looking it up in the store, and they're like, you don't buy it from here. And then I realized, uh-oh, I bought it on Amazon. I'm sorry. So then I'm thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And the guy said, well, you know, there's one option here. You can ask it to re-download its software. And I'm like, I can do what? I never even thought about
right.
this, right? So,
right.
And all I had to do was use my, you know, not the thing next to the Netflix button, one of those things with a work wheel on it, you know, and it went and it said, you know, download, you know, upload or whatever it was, new software.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it did it all by itself. It knew how to get into my internet. It knew it, and I had no idea that it knew anything. It was smarter than I was. And the next thing you know, bang, totally fixed. It's so.
So here's the important question: is the Game of Thrones ending better now that you have the right software on your TV?
No, it is not. No, I still couldn't see what was going on. I have no idea. Wait a second. Well, you know, we found out later from our dear friend Richard Roper, who handles all of our entertainment for us here, that you know there might have been a reason they were doing that. They make the scenes darker so they don't have to spend as much on the special effects because they'd spent too much money on their dragons. Right? And they couldn't even get the dog. They couldn't even get the dire wolf to show up. They had to literally send him away. Hey, nice to meet you, ghost. Get out. But think about that. Think about the money that HBO spends on that. And then how much they're losing, or they say that they're losing on password stealing and things like that, too. I mean, that's just people. Yeah. If you're going to get it, you're going to have to pay for it. This idea of digital stealing, it's going to be over, and they're going to come to your house. I mean, they'll
have the digital police.
Right. This could be
the
like
TV police.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're like ICE, except they'll have TV on their thing instead of ICE.
Sure.
Well, you know, in England. But wait a second. But in England, they've got that.
No, they don't.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For years. For years now with cable and stuff like that.
I thought they all pay for the BBC as part of their television license fees and
but
stuff that they have
if you,
to do.
If you didn't. If you claimed you didn't have a TV, you didn't have to pay for the BBC.
Oh, you could opt out. I didn't know that.
They had trucks that would drive around the streets, and they would point an antenna at your house, and it would know if you had a TV, and you'd get fined if you weren't paying and you were using the TV. How about that?
Yeah.
That's right.
Could be the future. Yeah,
that's communism right there, my friends. No wonder they want a Brexit. All right, Ian, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Of course. Take care.
Thanks, Ian.
Always great. Ian Scher from CNET. They explain everything, even if there's nothing to be explained, which, as it turns out, there really kind of isn't. Although, the password situation, if it's limiting me to, I guess it's per screens at a time, right?
It seems like they haven't been really clear about it. Netflix, in its press release, said they're going to do it in a consumer-friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
But what way that is, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, they already sort of limit you on how many streams, don't they? You can't, you get an alert if you have too many going on.
Well, and so if you got you, see, this is how it breaks out. Because there's boy shows, there's girl shows, there's mom shows, there's dad shows.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a bunch of people in the house. What are you going to do? And you got one account.
Yeah, but you can have, like, what, five profiles on each account?
Yeah, but
that
I think
right.
They're going to limit the number of... Yeah, but that's the thing. How about grandma stealing the account from somewhere else?
Well, that's what I'm saying. What if they're not stealing, but they're not in the same house?
Right. That's the issue. That's what they want to know. Like, grandma in North Dakota, you know, she wants to watch The Crown. I'm sorry, Grandma. You're going to have to go back to the antenna TV in North Dakota. Good luck on that! Lauren, since you're here, could you tell us what's happening on the roadway? News coming from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in just a few minutes. I love this story today, that there was a guy on Reddit, A Redditor? Is that what you call somebody who's on Reddit?
Sure. So. Why
sure.
not?
Sure, why not? Yeah. A Reddit user found a somewhat accurate way to predict what kind of a game NBA's James Harden was going to have when he entered into a town.
Okay. I imagine this has nothing to do with basketball.
It does not. Turns out that Mr. Harden, when he would arrive in a town to play an away game, if the town had a very robust strip club economy, Mr. Harden did not play as well.
How would that be connected?
There was a cross angry centrist cross-referenced four seasons worth of data with the average review of strip clubs that appeared when they typed city strip clubs.
Oh, boy.
He says that I have proven to a statistically significant degree that NBA superstar James Harden's game performance declines in cities with higher-rated strip clubs.
So who has the highest-rated strip clubs?
Well, there's a related story about what he did at a Houston strip club that made news. So I'm going to guess that would be on the list.
So the worst city for strip clubs is Toronto, it turns out. I think that's a bit of a shocker, right? I guess Windsor is the place, right? Right across the border from Detroit.
I don't know.
Right across the river from Detroit.
I mean, I've heard of, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Windsor is, yeah. Stuff. That's where, it's all kinds of things happen in Windsor. Yeah. That's Canada's dirty little mind right there, Windsor, Ontario. But Toronto is a respectable city, and Canada is kind of a conservative nation in terms of they're all polite, right? Oh, sorry. Oh my gosh! It seems like your clothes fell off. Here, I got a blanket. I'm going to put it around you. Okay.
Don't worry. I'll cover my eyes.
Well, sorry. Let me pick up that dollar bill for you.
Oh, you don't have to pick it up like that. No, I got it.
Make it rain with maple syrup.
The stats also bore out that Harden's best performance, again, was in Toronto, and he had his worst performance in Miami.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah.
So do we file this in the whole useless research file?
No, I find this to be something.
Would be gamblers looking at this for the rest of James Harden's career.
I was thinking
he's in
that.
Miami.
Right.
Take the points.
There's a Harden jersey hanging up in a strip club in Houston.
Hey, he's in town this weekend. We'll see how his performance does. Bulls hosting the Rockets Saturday.
A particular woman thanked Harden on social media after a lucrative shift in Houston. Right? In his home base there. That's very interesting.
Thank you for that brick of $100 bills, James.
So Miami's when he plays the worst.
Right, because they have the best strip clubs.
Best strip clubs on the road. Although Houston, you worked in Houston. That's
the
biggest strip club place.
Yeah, I covered the strip club industry when I first got there. It's very active.
I worked in Houston as well. All that city is strip malls and strip clubs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's why James Harden was very happy. Did he work that trade together? Wait, I can't remember. How did he get there?
I don't remember either.
Harden was a trade. Yeah, it was a trade.
Yeah, whatever. But he got his agent was like, "Puppy darling, sweetheart, listen, we've got to get him to Houston. He really does love the culture in Houston.
Big fan of
the Houstonians.
Strip malls.
He loves strip malls and strip clubs. Loves anything with the word strip in it. All right.
Great work by the Reddit user, though.
That's pretty interesting.
Did they come up in any other cities other than his home base in Miami?
Well, it's just ranked. There's like a whole, you can go on ranks. Reddit or complex.com. I think complex.com's got it as well.
Check it out.
So you just
could help a few folks.
Yes. Oh, sure. Right, it can help some of our people who like to, maybe spend a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, I've been looking all over this thing. Pound the points. We got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom too. Right. It is the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Stepping into the studio right now from the ABC7, I've heard of them, is Mark Rivera. He is a reporter and has got a really interesting story.
Yes.
You went down to the border, Laredo, Texas, right?
Yes.
Is where you went. along with your producer, Christine Tressel. I need to give her credit, because if I don't give her credit, she will kill me.
Well, I'm so glad you did.
Yes.
Yeah,
she could kill you with a paperclip. She's one of those
She can. She's incredible.
Watch out.
Complete badass.
Yeah.
The two of you went down to the border in Laredo, and you told the story. You did a bunch of things. You did a bunch of rotations with Border Patrol.
Sure.
Right? From horseback riding to swift boat to everything else to see, you know, what it is, their job that they do. But you tied it to a family from Gary, Indiana, right? That are sort of on both sides of this coin of fighting the illegal drug trade. Explain the story.
So when we got down there, they really showed us, you know, basically how they do their enforcement at the border. So, yes, we were on horseback. We were in the air in helicopters looking at, them trying to track down people who were trying to sneak over the border. We were there in processing facilities for people who are coming up and seeking asylum. So we saw how they're treated during that process. And one of the things that we were struck by was we met a man who was working at Customs and Border Protection right at the border, where, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of cars and people are coming through every day. They're trying to search those cars and make sure drugs aren't coming through. He's from Gary, Indiana, and his brother is a Gary police officer. So these are two brothers who have that law enforcement thread more than 1,000 miles from each other.
Right.
It's incredible.
What you mentioned, the asylum areas, what did you witness? I don't know how much time you were able to spend there, because only one of many stops you took. But did you, we hear so much coverage of it, but so few of us have ever seen that. What were your observations there?
It's true. We got really kind of unprecedented access in terms of being able to get inside and to see how this really happens. So people coming up to the border and claiming asylum status and wanting to come over and be processed here. And when you walk in, it's a very antiseptic environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's antiseptic. Sometimes you see families there. We saw, you know, pregnant women and children. The processing time can take about 2 to 3 hours. So during that time, they're in this kind of holding area. It's kind of resembles like a jail-like experience there, but it was very clean. Everyone was very cordial, and that's kind of the experience that we had there.
That's interesting.
And then where do they go from there?
So from there, they at this point, there's they are, if they're amenable, they're sent back to Mexico under migrant protection protocols. This is a new agreement between the Trump administration and Mexico that basically will allow them to go back to Mexico, or kind of tell them to go back to Mexico, mm-hmm. and wait there for as much as a month or more for their court date back in the U.S. So that's
and
where
the
they
court
go
will be down there in some way. There's a set up judges, mm-hmm. right? That was one of the other issues. There weren't enough judges to handle these kinds of cases, and mm-hmm. but they have set up a program for that.
So there's a court that's set up right on CBP property, mm-hmm. Right there on the other side of the bridge on the U.S. side, and it is a tent court, essentially. I mean, they're basically shipping containers that are put together with a white kind of canvas roof, and and that's where they're processed.
You know, cartels fighting over territory and that kind of thing just obviously made big news with this Mormon family, the women and children, who the horrific situation there. I know you traveled weeks ago, so that news wasn't it wasn't part of the headlines at the time, but the idea and the fact and reality of cartels warring with each other over drug routes into the U.S., I imagine is one of the major issues that they deal with.
It's central. I mean, it's basically the number one thing on their list, right, at Laredo, because it's such a valuable port of entry, not just for all of the legitimate commerce that comes in, because there are 7,000 trucks a day, semi-loads, that come through just every single day,
right.
Not to mention the tens of thousands of cars and people doing legitimate commerce that come over every single day right in Laredo, Texas. But then, of course, because of those numbers, there's also a lot of illegitimate trade that comes through as well. So there, basically, Customs and Border Protection, we were able to see them trying to stop that illegal trade and the drug trafficking that comes through. Mm-hmm. And really what you get a sense of when you talk to these officers is that they're trying their best that they can with what they have to try and catch them. I mean, they're scanning these trucks, they're scanning cars, they have, you know, trained dogs that can sniff for drugs and even money and guns that are coming from the U.S. to Mexico. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is drug cartels are playing a numbers game.
Mark, I want to play this clip from your special. Is it tonight on ABC 7?
Tonight at 10 o'clock.
Yep. Okay. All right. So this is Mark Rivera. He's the reporter who was down on the border. And this is the story in part of these two brothers from Gary, Indiana, the one who's working the border down in Laredo, Texas, and the other who's up working the other side of the drug scourge in Gary.
Not only is it in our blood, but it's in our heart. You know, when I signed up for Gary PD and I went to the academy stuff, I knew it was dangerous. This was not my first choice, but I applied here and I'm here 24 years later. But we do share some things. Like, he will tell me how people hide drugs in vehicles. I'll try to pass it on to other officers and stuff like that.
I mean, he's telling me, like, of a big drug seizure that they get. And sometimes he'll tell me, yeah, that came from Laredo. I was like, are you kidding me? You know, and it bothers me, of course, because we think that we're stopping as much as we can. But, I mean, it still gets through. And I'm always telling him, you know, what to watch out for. I mean, he needs to be careful because he's out there, you know, and he doesn't have backup like we do. Here, you call for backup, you got 15 guys helping you out immediately.
Interesting.
How about that?
Yeah, you know, it's incredible to hear them talk about their jobs because in some ways they're so similar, right? I mean, they're fighting drugs, mm-hmm. illegal drugs, but, you know, in some ways they're so different. And on the border, they're dealing with so many higher numbers, like Joe Garza, who is the officer that's on the border, was saying. I mean, he has backup instantaneously almost. If he needs help, there are tons of armed people who can come and help him at a moment's notice, versus his brother, Javier Garza, who's in Gary, Indiana, who doesn't have a partner, you know, in his right. car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if something goes down, it can be 3 to 5 minutes before somebody can get to him, depending on where he is.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's
amazing because you would sort of imagine it to be the other way around.
Right. No, absolutely.
And it's not. It's a dangerous situation.
Did they talk about the types of drugs that are coming in? Because when you read about it, so it was cocaine, marijuana, heroin, no longer I guess there's a growth in opioids and methamphetamines coming over the border, whereas 10, 15 years ago, that certainly wasn't the case. It's changed.
Absolutely. If you look at the numbers, the number one seizure that they still get are you know, tens of thousands of pounds of marijuana, right? That's the number one.
Yeah.
But if you look at those numbers over the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, you see marijuana is still high, but fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine, those are going up.
Hmm.
So that's what they're dealing with now. And the issue with that is that those types of drugs are a lot more compact. And so they're trying to, yeah, what the cartels are doing are they're trying to sneak them in different ways, in these really deep level, hidden inside of compartments in cars and in these, you know, other areas of trucks that are, they're trying to hide it in different ways. With the marijuana, it's so dense, so large,
right.
You know, in the
yeah.
quantities that when they scan, you know, I saw these, they took us behind the scenes and we saw these scans, these x-rays of vehicles
mm-hmm.
And these massive trucks. And inside, you see the marijuana. It's, you know, three levels of tamales and then a ton of marijuana under that. If you look at that at a car and you're trying to find cocaine and fentanyl, you have to look a lot harder because it's a lot smaller and packed in.
And it's so pungent, marijuana, too. You'd think that the dogs and things like that could pick it up
sure.
easily.
Sure. And, but that's, they try all sorts of things to try and get around that, too.
Somehow they got it figured out, but yeah. Denver doesn't. I don't know how that worked out. You know, there is going to be a change in that, though. And people will say, well, you know, it's legal in the United States. Well, why are they still bringing it across? Well, it's not legal in the United States. It's legal state by state. And eventually the federal laws are going to have to change so that there can be interstate commerce of marijuana, which there currently is not,
right.
Because that is going to put a big reduction. Because, again, still, number one cash crop in drug trafficking coming from the southern border.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be that has to be addressed. And obviously these other things. There was a gigantic crackdown. A lot of the opioids that are coming in, they were finding that they're coming in. These are Chinese manufactured opioids that are coming over the border. And there was just a major trial in China in which one of these guys was making fentanyl, just given the death sentence.
Oh,
wow. A 2-year suspended death sentence, though. It's interesting how they do it there. They don't execute the person immediately. They have a 2-year sentence where he's on death row, and then they make a decision based on his family and his own retribute, you know, how he wishes to change his life and all that. What are they going to do? It's really, when you read the depth of the story, it's fascinating how the Chinese are dealing with this. But it was a DEA and Chinese Internal Security Services investigation that found this whole group of people that were manufacturing and then distributing the fentanyl and selling it out. Mm. This is an internet case. This was not coming across the border case. But it's an international problem. Yeah. Well, this is a big deal.
This is
a big deal. Mark Rivera tonight, 10 o'clock, ABC 7, you'll be able to see Mark's reporting. And is this a two-night or is this just one night?
You know what? Our first one aired last night. We had one in this afternoon, and then we'll have one tonight at 10 o'clock.
And people go up on the website, too.
Yes, ABC7Chicago.com. It'll all be there.
All right.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening?
30 years since the Berlin Wall came down, what can Americans learn from that pivotal moment in history? Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Look at that.
And that's an Eric Rung produced report.
Yeah, and he's in our newsroom right now. This is what we call synergistic in.
I love it.
Synergistic in.
Is that what they call it?
No, that's not what they call it at all. I don't know actually what they call it. Coming up on the program, Sweet Lou Kanellis is going to be here.
Sweet.
Yep. And not only is he going to speak Greek to you, you're going to speak Greek back to him.
It's
going to this whole thing
Are
just
you going
happens
to
like that.
Cucina tonight.
Yes,
it might come up.
Yes, I don't know what it's always a conversation.
Going to the Hellenic Museum this evening.
Yes, there's always something. But we are going. It's the halfway point of the bear season, and you know, Lou said they were going to be 11-5.
He did, but he usually is highly optimistic at the beginning of the season. Even against the odds.
Yeah. And I said if they lost their first, I don't remember what, I think I said 11-5, but if they lost, that's only if they beat Green Bay in the opening game. If they didn't, they'd go 8-8. I don't think they're going to make 8-8.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Four-game skid in a pretty difficult schedule ahead, so.
Yeah.
Not hopeful.
So he's going to be here. We're going to discuss these things, and I'm going to have my own. I'm bringing medical staff in for me.
Good. That's wise. Yes.
Did you notice at Hamp and OB on their show, they had medical staff with them? The whole thing was a conversation
was
about their blood pressure medication.
I was hoping.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I love listening to that show.
Yeah. We don't want anything. We do not need one of those guys going down.
We need them for this season.
I mean, if Kaz went down, that's one thing. But Hamp and OB, we can't have him go down.
Gosh, that's not true. What?
Well, Kaz is on the phone. I don't know.
It's less stressful on the phone. We're not as worried about
him. We can always get a guy to sound like Kaz on the phone.
We do need them.
By the way, let's take a closer look at this James Harden shirt that we were talking about earlier.
Which
a Reddit user ranked the cities for best strip clubs and then found a correlation between James Harden plays and his performance suffers when he goes to cities with better strip club ratings. Mm-hmm. Number one, Miami. Number two, Chicago. And he's in town this weekend, Saturday. So we'll see if there's any correlation. We'll see if he hits the town at one of our very impressive strip clubs, and maybe it affects his play Saturday, and the Bulls get a W over Houston, a very good team.
Oh.
I could see this leading Kevin's sports report on Monday.
Mm-hmm. I might
have to do some investigative work of my own and maybe scout the local strip clubs to see if we can find James Harden anywhere over the weekend.
So if they win, you'll be like, okay, well, they must not be that good. Therefore, really what I found is that the rankings are inaccurate on these websites.
Or he just takes it easy, goes to a steakhouse instead of a strip club.
After this report is out, he knows that people are going to be watching him, taking pictures of him, and, you know, posting it everywhere. It's going to happen. You know it will.
Chicago, an impressive rating on this guy's scale.
Where was it again?
Miami's number one at 4.03. Who knows how he came up to the conclusion? Chicago's 3.95.
He's got a coefficient. We have to have coefficients for the cities, and it's a 4.03 coefficient.
It's highly mathematical.
That's right.
This is real data.
Which is tied with Salt Lake City, which he notes, LOL, what question mark?
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that? That surprised me.
I know that surprises a lot of people. But, you know, the thing is that the town, you know, Salt Lake is dry.
Yeah. You have to go to those clubs. You have to belong to clubs in order to drink.
Exactly. Gotcha. But once you belong to a club, all hell breaks loose. You can buy yourself into a club at any given night, right? I mean, there's not. It's not like you have to have a membership.
Than you think. Yeah.
It's basically a cover charge.
I want to get the points here.
Isn't that a big Mormon community?
Yes. Oh yeah.
I didn't know they were into strippers.
People fleeing their families and going to strip clubs.
I think there's a lot that goes on there. I think that there's two different Salt Lakes. There's the Salt Lake that's the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and the
Mitt Romney.
Kind of the, right, there's that and a bunch of people, you know, button down folks. And then Book of Mormon, you know, that thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's the people that are there for the rest of the commerce and look out. And it's very bifurcated.
Mm-hmm.
It's polar in terms of the differential in behavior. Right?
I would agree. Having been there.
Got to remember that wasn't that where the flu game was for Michael Jordan? Right?
That was the Utah Jazz.
I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember they did when Dennis Rodman would go to Salt Lake City, he'd get the sushi flu as they used to call it.
Oh, God.
When he couldn't show, he was too hungover to actually play in the game.
We always knew he had bigger aspirations to be the ambassador to North Korea.
Potentially saving the world.
For sure, yes. Absolutely.
Us. Toronto, Cleveland, Charlotte ranked the bottom three on the strip club chart.
Oh. And Toronto winning the NBA championship last year, too.
That's a good point.
You had to be really good. That's how good you have to be, is you have to be so good you beat your own lame strip clubs. Because your lame strip clubs are maybe your best defensive player. Your hot strip clubs. All right, well, we would like to congratulate our friends at VIPs, or what is that thing called now?
I don't know, there's Polecat VIP, there's Score.
Yeah.
I've been told.
Any of those places. We don't know the names. We don't know the names. We have no idea what you're talking about. All right, coming up, Sweet Luke and Ellis will join us. But first, we do the news with Eric Rung right here at 6:30.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, and we're talking Bears because Sweet Lou Canellis has entered the studio with us. Hey, Lou.
Hi, guys.
How are you doing?
Long time no see.
Good to see you, Lou.
We'll wait till the middle of the segment to remind you what your predictions were for the season for the Bears.
Do you
when
have
we all
to?
Predicted it. What was it? Right, weeks before the season began? Days? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was a little bit before.
A little before that?
Yeah, it might have been
a ways out.
Before the opener.
I had 12-4. Hand up.
Oh, my gosh.
I think I said 11-5.
You did. Yes. Rose has put that in the promo, in fact. I don't know if you heard.
Thanks, Ro.
But,
Ro.
Doesn't look like 11-5 now, we don't think.
Well, they'd have to run the table. Is it possible for them to win 8 in a row, Kevin?
No,
think so, based off what we've seen.
Are you out of your freaking mind?
Well,
you know the thing that
dispensary on the way here. I think I am.
they were asking me earlier about Cam Newton as an option for next year.
No,
I also
okay.
Why not?
My response. Well, I didn't even get to give a response. So he doesn't interrupt me on Bears. I said that the next 8 games is basically Italian evaluation for Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy to see what they can muster up here over the next 8 weeks. What if it's the same over the next 8 weeks here, Lou? As the previous 8 games.
Well, it won't be 8 weeks. I mean, because Nagy keeps preaching, you know, keeping the locker room together. He doesn't want to see a divisive locker room. So I think he's got another week, maybe even just this Sunday. And then there possibly could be a change at quarterback. Well, because here, think about it. There's 53 other guys on this act. For game day, there's 53 guys on a roster. All right. And you've got to put these guys in the best position to win. All right, Allen Robinson or Taylor Gabriel, better example, because I think Taylor's in the last year of his contract. All right, these guys have to believe that having Mitch as their quarterback is best for not only the team, but for their career as well. So if they feel like, well, they just keep parading Mitch out there because they're going to see if Mitch can still play this game and we're in week 14, now he's going to start to lose the locker room because he's not doing what's best for the team. He's doing what's best for the organization and for Mitch Trubisky. And I don't think if Matt Nagy's a man true to his word, which I just heard him. I just ran it on my sportscast at 5:50 before I got here. All right, thank you very much.
Not the first bell that's going to be rung today.
He's about keeping this team together and not losing his own credibility with his players.
Well, you saw that with Mitch Trubisky giving that news conference that now has been picked apart by absolutely everybody, saying, you know, people talking about us on TV, they don't know us, they don't know how we play, they don't know we're capable, they don't know what's in our
heart. But we have televisions, that's our problem.
But
we
the TVs are the problem. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's frustrating as all hell to hear constant criticism when you know you're not doing what you're supposed to do and you have fans booing you constantly. I was at the game, the Chargers game, first quarter. The booing was out. I mean, it was like, I don't know how you perform in that environment. It's got to be tough.
People are fed up.
Well,
ticket holders.
Yeah, how much money it is to go to a game? People are spending money.
Yeah, listen, I've got seats in the 400 level, and they're... Thank you very much. They're about $1.30 a piece a game.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a deal. I mean, I don't have a seat license. Imagine, think about those people that have seat licenses out there.
He didn't say that.
Well, that sit in the row con seats. I mean, those are really expensive.
That's true. All right, so I feel very, 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 very strongly that they need to make a change here. I have something to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
The Chicago Bears do not have a first-round pick next year in the draft.
Correct.
Isn't that correct?
Correct.
That is correct. Okay. That is correct.
Okay.
So they don't have a first-round pick. So this idea that they're going to be able to find some sort of draft solution to this at quarterback is... It's unlike they'd have to trade for a guy. They'd have to move. There would have to be some sort of a guy comes up in free agency and then they really go after it. And they would have to pay pretty heavily. Obviously, you got Tom Brady, the rumored to be leaving New England. He's also rumored to be heading to Los Angeles. So there's that.
But is that a possibility for the Bears?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't even think it's worth discussing.
Okay.
Right.
That's how far off I think it is.
So Cam Newton, which you had almost a violent reaction to Cam Newton. When we just said it, the man is in chunky soup. The man is on a point like Oikos. Isn't he on the Oikos
yogurt?
Greek
I think
yogurt?
He used to have a yogurt endorsement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, doesn't that help him with the acidophilus?
It does not help him at all. I don't think his personality, I don't think he fits the culture that they keep talking about in Hallis Hall. And I just find Cam to be more about Cam than be about the team. And I don't find it any coincidence that suddenly Cam's not playing and the Panthers are winning with a rookie quarterback, correct? So I'm not sure he's the right fit. And I'm not sure that Mitchell Trubisky is the right guy to lead the way. And you're right, Ro, they don't have a first-round pick, so they're not going to draft a quarterback who's going to be their savior next season. And it's not Chase Daniel either. I don't know where that guy is. They're going to have to get lucky.
Jay Cutler?
No chance.
This is why I don't think they're
even though his wife just opened up a store in the West Loop, right?
Thought that was coincidental.
Yeah.
Kevin?
This is why I don't think they're going to bench Mitch Trubisky. Because of what you just said. What are their options for next year?
Well, they don't have any, but I think that they have to, for the rest of this season, put these players in the best position to win. And if Mitch goes out against the Detroit team on Sunday that's allowing almost 500 yards a game in offense and 27 points a game and continues to play like he has, then I think at some point at halftime, because of what Anna just said, I think the boos become so loud at Soldier Field that it just reeks of a change. It has to happen. And forget about the kid's confidence. He has no confidence anyway if he struggles in the first two quarters against Detroit on Sunday. Confidence doesn't matter. I keep hearing that. Oh, yeah, you're going to ruin his confidence forever. Did you see him throw off the back foot 5 times last Sunday? Right. I did.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be getting worse is the problem.
I just want to point out, I wish we had this audio before I bring this up. But, you know, Lou, they've got this Hyundai commercial on Fox when the Bears are on. And there's a right after halftime, they return to the game. And it's Lou voicing over a slide of a Hyundai slide. And Lou recaps the first half.
Oh, that's cool.
And, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Except what Lou said in the first half, after the first half of Sunday's game, which is Mitchell Trubisky is, you know, 1 for 32 with 1 yard in total offense, or whatever it was that
nine,
you said.
I think, right?
Yeah, 9 yards in total offense. And so I texted Lou immediately, and I'm like, that was the most laughable. I want to know if Hyundai won their money back from that, because it was the most laughable thing I have ever heard.
I'm supposed to give a little tidbit about what happened in the first half.
Thank you.
I am struggling. I have
It's like 10 seconds he's got there, or 7 seconds or something, right?
Six and a half.
Oh,
six and a half.
Come on, can't beat him up for that. That's hard.
Listen, do you know that in the, what, 8 games, the Bears have scored once on their opening drive this season? Gee. All right. And in the last 4 games, over the course of this 4-game losing streak, they haven't scored in the first half of any of those 4 games. And if you don't get off to a good start, that's the problem. And people are like, oh, they're pinning the, you know, they're pinning the blame on the defense. Listen, this defense was great last year because the offense played well. For the most part, got ahead in football games, allowed the defense to pin its ears back and attack the quarterback. And once you put pressure on the quarterback, you force turnovers. I mean, it all goes together. The offense needs to lead the way, and it just hasn't done the job.
Thank you, Lou.
It's tough to get on the defense because they haven't even had a chance to really pin their ears back. I mean, they did the first couple games, but it has felt like every single series for the defense is a must stop. I can't think of it does.
Or a score.
I can't think of one single series where it didn't feel like if they don't get a stop here, Bears can be in some serious trouble.
Can I tell you guys, to me, the biggest surprise has been Matt Nagy's play calling.
Oh, my God.
I have a theory on this. I have a theory because you hear this. I hear this a lot in my own head. My theory on this is that they have shortened up the playbook.
No question.
Because they don't trust Mitch to remember what's going on.
You're right.
Oh, my God.
That's all.
I can't believe I'm right about that.
You don't want to be right about that. That's the problem.
I haven't talked to Coach Nagy about that, but that's what I came away with.
That's what it sounds, it feels like, right?
That's what I came away with. What I came away with is that he is not absorbing what Nagy wanted to do, taking the next step, as we heard throughout training camp, with his offense. Mm-hmm. So what he's done is he's made it basic out there, and teams are onto the basic offense that the Bears run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. Now, we had Matt Forte on, your friend, earlier on in the program today.
We mentioned you. He said hi.
Yes. I love Matt.
Mm-hmm. He's great. He's one of my favorite former Chicago Bears. I hated watching him in a Jets uniform. There was nothing worse than seeing him in a Jets uniform. There's nothing worse than seeing anybody in a Jets uniform. Jets,
if you're wearing a Packers uniform, that's worse.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if you're in a Jets uniform, you've given up. You've given up hope. I think is what's happened.
Unless you're getting paid $4 or $5 million, and there's nothing wrong with that.
So here's the thing that he said. The David Montgomery is a total stud. I mean, there's a guy. That's running back to running back right there. Right. Here's a guy who understands the physical nature of that position and understands what it takes to do it. And this guy, he has got no stopping him, all heart. I mean, the yards after first contact are some of the best in the league.
Best in college football, best in the NFL the last 2 years. No one was better at breaking tackles than David Montgomery.
Yeah, so God bless him, but you can't use him on every play. And can I say something here? Okay, so you got that guy, right? You got that guy who's like he just runs through a line. He's not that big. He's one of those guys, a low center of gravity runner, right? Then you got Tariq Cohen, I love him. Human joystick. Who doesn't love Tariq Cohen? It's fun. I love that video of him jumping backwards, upside down, catching both balls, blah, 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 blah. You at first and goal, or second and goal, or whatever. I give second and goal from the, half a yard line. You're going to run a guy who weighs 100, whatever he weighs, 180 pounds, as opposed to a guy who, explodes into the line? What are they thinking?
I know. I mean, it's one of those plays where I'm sitting there with Jim Miller, because we watched the game along with Anthony Heron getting ready for the postgame show, and Jim looks at me, a former quarterback in the NFL, and he goes, what was that?
Here's what I want to know. Is Nagy a Russian spy? I don't know. What else can we... there's no other explanation for this. This is Putin's guy, right? Is this what's going on? Okay. Lou, do you have a new restaurant opening?
I do.
Oh, isn't it funny that tomorrow. I should mention that? Tomorrow. Where is this
tomorrow
restaurant
night,
opening?
Over on Wells in Huron, Avli River North. 702 North Wells.
Avli, right, it's A-V-L-I, right?
A-V-L-I, Contemporary Greek.
And the original location has been rock like rock star reviews. You've gotten the awards and everything pouring in. It's, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That, Lou.
Thank
that
you.
Is
it's been you guys.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was in here when we first talked about Avli Taverna, and you guys, thankfully, we you know, we appreciate it.
We
you celebrated.
Up.
You celebrated your Christmas party there, and, mm-hmm. and Lincoln Park was just great on Wrightwood and Wayne. It's been terrific. And ironically, we opened up. Anna, you would appreciate this.
Yeah.
So tonight is Cuisina at the Hellenic Museum in Greektown
yep.
on Halsted Street.
Well.
Last year we opened up Avli Taverna. Thank you very much. The night after Cuisina, and we are opening up Avli River North the night after Cuisina 1 year later.
Perfect.
It's lovely.
Bravo.
Are you going to come by?
Bravo.
Brody,
sure.
Did you like the Saganaki with honey and figs?
Oh, yes, I loved it.
Oh, gosh.
That's
the
best Saganaki ever had. Yeah, killer. I was going to say that his restaurant up in Lincoln Park was on fire, but that means something
Don't
different.
Don't tell me that.
It's totally different in the Greek restaurant industry.
It's the Saganaki.
Yeah. What do you mean it's on fire? We didn't plan that till midnight. All right, let us now just celebrate the fact that Lou Kanellis is. Are you going to be the front of house guy? Are you going to be welcoming?
I'll be front of the house. Yeah.
And Saturday night.
Remember, what was his name? Perry at Diana's.
Mm-hmm.
No, Petros.
Petros.
I do not remember that.
There was a Perry.
No, it was Petros.
Okay.
Petros.
Perry was at Roditi's. Yeah.
There you go.
I told you the bell was going to be on fire. I mean, it's so hot. I can't even touch the bell anymore.
We mentioned Athena or Greek Islands yet.
There we go.
Okay. Those are all the
nine mooses.
Artopoli is actually excellent. And it's overlooked.
Artopoli just got sold.
No.
Yes.
All of Greektown is just changing.
That's why we're opening up in River North.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for keeping the Greek American cuisine alive.
Yes.
I do. I would like Halsted to get at least a block of Halsted to be Greek restaurants.
Right?
Well, you need a couple. You know.
No, you need one block.
One block, yeah.
Just one block to celebrate.
Yeah. One block. How can that can't? I mean,
how are we going to have the Greek parade, the Greek Independence Parade on Halsted Street?
In front of, like, condos.
Exactly.
Right?
With Lou Kanellis being carried on a golden human livery.
Remember
wearing
that role?
A toga with grape leaves around his head.
Yes!
I swear to
That's
God.
What happens.
I have had more people say to me, I heard Rokon say, and really, were you in a robe on Halsted Street?
Trying to find out if that was right.
I have never seen anything ever in my life like that afternoon. We were Saturday afternoon for that weekend, right? That Greek Fest weekend on Halsted. And being with Lou Kanellis was like, it was honestly.
He's the king of Greek town.
It was unbelievable.
There's no question.
We had fun. We had plenty of
Retsina
wine.
Yes, from Athens to here was running up. You know my daughter. What about my daughter? Pictures of their daughters and his wife is standing right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. This baby, beautiful baby.
Yeah, all right.
You drank Retsina?
Oh yeah, I actually kind of like Retsina.
Really?
Yeah, I know.
We don't carry Retsina over at
Avli. Of course you don't.
No. Finest.
I'm old.
Finest Greek wine.
I've been great wine at your place.
Everybody thinks I'm Greek, but I grew up because my family, their best friends were Greek, and so I grew up in a Greek kitchen, right? With Angie Sakokas, the great Angie Sakokas, who made food for us, my whole family, and it was. It was just such a thing. I've always been jealous. I won't want to change my name, and I want to pretend I'm Greek. Is what I want to do. All right, thank you, Lou Kanellis.
Thank you, Rosie.
Ro, how are they going to finish the last eight? Just real quick.
2-6.
Oh. 5-3.
Okay.
4-4.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. You guys are crazy. I gotta go. We got Lauren Lapkus got the traffic right up.